The Administrative Regulatory Review Committee will come to order. Today, present, we have Representative Keller, Representative Tarr, and Representative Wilson will be joining us shortly online. I also want to thank my staff, Dean Williams, and also Jim Pound, for helping put together this hearing. I want to thank the House Records as well, Crystalline Jones and Deanna Burns in Juneau, as well as the LIO moderator here in Anchorage, Alan Marasigan. Today, we will be discussing four different regulations in the Regulatory Review Committee. One, restraint and seclusion of students, which is 04AAC06.175 and 177. We'll also be discussing accountability of schools, 04AAC06, 812B, 883, 895, and 899. Also, the Common Core Standards Initiative, which is 04AAC04.145, and the Internet Speed Cost, 04AAC33665B and 670. And with that, we are going to go ahead, and I will let you know Deed is online right now. Marcy, welcome, Marcy. Also, Rachel Siebert and Tim Klein are all online. But first, we're going to take the individuals that are in the room. I know Deed will be speaking. The Commissioner Hanley will be speaking around 2 o'clock p.m. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and invite up our first guest speaker, Dr. Dina Paranimo. From the MATSU superintendent. Please state your name, and I know you'll do a better job than I did, but your name and affiliation, please.
Sure. My name is Dina Paramo, and I am the current superintendent for the last 4 years of the MATSU Borough School District.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to start in regards to these four regulations that we're just looking into today. Do you have any opening comments or just want to proceed into the questions?
Well, I can certainly answer any questions, and perhaps if I my comments will then just pertain to the interest of the committee.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so the first issue of regulation is funding for improvement of internet speed to public schools. Some of the legislature believe while this regulation is clearly filed, it lacks the clear articulation of ongoing fiscal responsibilities. MATSU may be an exception to some of the other 50-some school districts, but can you just tell us how you stand on the internet speeds in the MATSU?
Certainly you'll find MATSU and the other large 5 school district, as well as many others that are incorporated or larger city centers, have access to internet speeds above the 10 megabits. Mm-hmm. For instance, all of our schools are connected. Our connectivity is at least 30 megabits and to 100, and some of our high schools are over that. We had been in a planning phase for quite some time where we have received FCC grants, federal grants, to build out fiber to our schools. Our delegation, Mr. Keller included, assisted us in matching state funds to have an RFP to build out to schools. And, of course, that really assisted the entire community, because once they put those trunks to schools, then all the neighborhoods around were connected. Certainly, the large 5 school districts are the minority in the 53 school districts that do exist in the state of Alaska, and I'm not sure how many have the speeds above 10 megabits, but it has been a concern of the superintendents in regard to connectivity, simply due to the fact that colleges and universities, on-site training places, all are beginning to use online learning to deliver curriculum.
Okay, so is it your understanding that you and all the districts around the state will have to increase your internet speed to handle the wave of online testing that is approaching? And if that is your understanding, what cost do you think you'll be facing?
Those of us that are certainly in core areas, mm-hmm. We will be able to use what they call, if I'm not technically correct, just an enterprise system where we can go directly into the internet or a web service, say in the cloud. But there is not enough speed in some of our remote school districts. And my understanding is that the department has arranged for caching of the assessment. The next 2 years of the assessment is designed to be a straightforward test, multiple copies of similar tests with similar questions for the next 2 years. In the third year out is what's called a dynamic test where depending on the individual who's taking the test, his or her right answer or wrong answer would select another question to really target the learning area. But until that time, the test is a multiple form test just given online, which is easy to cache in a system where it resides on a local server. And so my understanding from the training I received from the department is that it can be done, but in the future, certainly connectivity is a concern, I think, not just for school districts, but for medical places and other places in the state of Alaska.
Okay, so do you think that there's going to be any additional costs as this ramps up?
Certainly, if you're paying per megabit and you don't have any clause in your contracts, when you crank up those pipes, you actually pay more in your internet. But I'm not sure how much data will be used during that time. I don't have any specific numbers on that. But similar to, if I'm in my home and my kids text through our internet or do other things, that's one cost. If they're streaming video or movies, that's a different cost. And folks that I believe it works in the same manner. Depends on the type of data that you're pushing through the line.
And with that, how much did you get from the FCC grants? What was the dollar amount?
Matsu School District, to build out to our schools, received a combined, I don't have the exact, but from the state grants as well as the federal government through E-rate assistance, we received $6 million over, and I believe we're finishing up the last of the project. Just last year, we received another. Now, of course, we partnered with a local provider who applied for the grant, which is the MTA. Mm-hmm. But we're the partner because they needed schools is how you get those to build out communities. And our last school is Glacier View, and if you're familiar, that's one of our very remote K-12 schools with under 50 kids in it. Mm-hmm. And we just received $1.3 million. Not us personally; it's going to MTA to partner to bring fiber to that area.
And part of the grant, can I see the grant of the $6 million, and what was it strictly for these assessments?
No, ma'am. The grant was for connectivity to schools, for learning, for all types of things that we do online now, video conferencing, pushing out a class from one school to another. We did not, when we were doing this 5-6 years ago, all the while we do online testing through the measures of academic progress in our district, we didn't have a notion that this would lead to online testing around the state for our assessments. So we did this for the efficacy of our educational practices in MATSU, but now we're happy we have done so because of the testing as well.
Okay. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move into this online testing that you were just talking about. And the online testing, tell me the costs that it's going to be to your district, if we can just go ahead and talk about that, the training of the teachers, the increase of staffing, things like that in regards to these online assessments.
I'm not sure of the specific cost to the department for the actual test of it, but certainly districts, other than our IT folks, to be sure that every computer is touched, depending on the system you have to mirror, I could set up one computer and push it out to 50 to be sure that the computers are all ready, or whether you're going to have someone go around and have to touch every computer. It would depend each school to school with us to see how those systems are set up, because we have some older buildings, and then we have some newer buildings that the wireless is just better and the firewalls are better. But the tests themselves, we have, districts have always incurred costs during testing time because there are rules and regulations put in through IEPs in regard to how many students can be in a room, proctors, things like that. So during testing time, you know, we certainly hire quite a large amount of substitutes to be able to certified substitutes, that is mainly retired teachers, to assist us in providing the tests, because some students may not take a test in a group of more than four, things like that. During this time, we also have space availability issues, so we really utilize actually local senior centers, local churches, different places in order for us to be able to test all of our students. The most difficult part in MATSU would be our homeschool students, because we don't have a building large enough to test all of them, but they are literally dispersed around the district into different areas.
Okay, so I'm going to jump back to a word you keep using, pushing out. Explain the word. When you've said it several times, pushing out.
Through a, and I don't know the technical terms, but I understand it. So I could image one computer, say even at the district office where I work in Palmer, and if I imaged that computer and had a system to image then all the other, you know, I'm sure we have, you know, 10,000 computers, 15,000 computers in the Matsubara School District, I can have them look the same through one unit because, you know, the connectivity, and I can image a computer. If school districts have that availability, which is higher tech, I mean, I know that we do in many buildings, it's going to be simpler to set up each computer for testing than it would be if I'm in a school district where I do not have that availability and I actually have to get on each computer and put the image to be able to receive the test. So if you're cashing out, if your test is going to reside on a local server, those computers need to be able to talk to that server and feed that information back to it. I can, the system set up and technology, if you are able to image your computer from a distance, electronically, that would probably be most the easiest way rather than having to go to every single computer. And so those that have to do that, it's going to take man and woman hours.
So what exactly do you image on the computer?
When a child takes a test, it's high security. So you have to ensure that the test, and I'm just speaking through online tests that I already know exist, or we use the measures of academic progress. We have to ensure that the test is residing on a computer for us, and we have to be sure that the student's ID and name matches what they have so that you can make sure that the student's data is safe, it's secure, that that child's results can be read, and that if there's an error, say there's a power outage during the time that they're taking the test, that the information is saved so that the child wouldn't have to go back. And so each child, when he or she sits down to a computer, sits down and logs on their individual key name. And if I had to set up that system to be able to take the child's name at each computer, that would take me a lot longer than just having that image on that computer where a child sits down, sees, you know, log in your name, log in your password. If I had to create that on every computer from the system, that would take longer than if I just could do it from my computer and push that out.
Okay, I'm jumping a little bit around here, but you because you brought it up, I'm going to go ahead and address it, the privacy concerns. Is any private information being released about these students, or any mining of information happening on these assessments at all?
Well, certainly your ASPE score is reported as a school district, so you would have these students grouped, and that's very similar to our assessments now. It's very similar to ACT and SAT. I receive back as a district scores for the students in our different high schools so that we can see, you know, is there a teacher or a place for which students are excelling in an area? We want to capture that teacher, what he or she can do to teach other students. Individual parents do receive information in regard to their child's achievements, both their progress, and that is secured. We do follow FERPA laws. It is difficult to get into it, but each district has a housing network for their own data, as well as we have OASIS numbers, which are individual identifier numbers for each child. So they are not, the OASIS number resides at the state level, and then our district has a district number.
Okay, because there's been concerns in Kansas. We had a hearing on this in August where there's a breach of data. And so we're really concerned that we're using, you know, the same SIMO. We had Rep. Hyland here from Kansas last time, and they actually just stopped the whole program in Kansas. And unfortunately, in my opinion, we're ramping it up an entire year and kind of throwing the districts into a tailspin, basically trying to get ready for these assessments. They don't even have their teachers trained. They may not have the curriculum, the internet speeds, and things like that. So we're really concerned about ramping it up. And also the data protection. So explain these OASIS numbers to me.
Well, an OASIS number is provided to each child at an individual school district so that the state can determine funding for that child. In the past, prior to OASIS numbers, I might have a child during, there's a 20-day count period. This is one reason why they use it. There's a 20-day count period for enrollment in your school district. Sometimes a student would be in my school district for a little bit and then somebody else's school district, and two school districts would claim a child, and really that child had moved from one district to another, so technically he or she was in a district. When they created the OASIS number, there was no duplication of students, because if I had my own student number and they had their own student number, it was very difficult for the state to determine for funding of students, because it's funded by enrollment, every school district, what to do. So they had probably, it's been about 10 years, they came out with an OASIS number, which is a 10-digit individual identifier at the state level. And primarily, this is before the testing, before everything, that identifier was strictly used for the accountability of revenue that was given to school districts. At this time, because we do have to, under NCLB law, we do have to report our students' progress, and that's how they would assign in the past AYP. Currently, since we've received a waiver, it's called ASPI, A-S-P-I. They have to assign a school a progress number, either a star, or in the past it was AYP levels. In order to do that, they would need to know all the students in that school and their progress. They would use those OASIS numbers are attached to a student at a school and a district.
So they do go down. They're not in aggregate. They actually go down directly to the students, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so what controls can you prevent from cheating? Like what if a student gives another student, you know, their login ID or whatever?
Well, the OASIS number are controlled by the district. Students really don't know their OASIS numbers. Those are in the business side of the house, if you will, the school district. We do have individual identifiers in our school district. It used to be 5 digits, but we have more kids now, or about over 18,000, so kids have a 6-digit number. And actually in our school district, they know that number from kindergarten. Kindergartners can sit down at a computer and log it in. Some people think that's hard, but if you have grandkids or children, you know that they can figure out, they can break the code on your iPhone if they play with it enough. So kids have individual identifiers. They use that in our middle schools in Mat-Su. We have a keypad for lunches. And so if students receive free and reduced lunch, they don't have a ticket or a tag anymore that may identify them as a child of low socioeconomic. They key in the key numbers. Parents from home can put money on an account that the school can read, that the kid can key in their own identifier for Mat-Su School District number. Whether kids cheat on those, when they take out a library book, that's their number. So we use these numbers for everything, and kids have the same number from kindergarten all the way up. If kids want to see their grades online, we have a thing called iParent, iStudent. Kids can log on, look at their grades, look at the teacher's assignments, whatever. So they really, exactly. Whether they give someone else their number or not, you know, we would have to look, but certainly it is their private number, and certainly they could, you know, look. But for testing purposes, same with the map, I'm selecting a computer, putting a child's name on there, and that child, it's the adult in the room that sits that child in each one. Similar to when we would hand out a test booklet, the test booklets already have students' names on them and their ID numbers, and you would have to give, they're already pre-coded, all of the test booklets, except for kids who obviously move in. All test booklets, say for APTQE and SBAs, we're all pre-coded. So similar to a teacher having to put a booklet in front of a kid, a teacher has to place a child in front of a computer or a computer in front of a kid if it's wireless.
So we're going to move into a little bit, thank you for the explanation, but we're going to move into a little bit more about the assessments and what they're based on and the Common Core and things like that. But first of all, Are you comfortable with an outside person developing our assessments, and, you know, the teachers are in the classroom teaching, and an outsider is developing tests, and the teachers don't even get to see the test nor give the test, but yet their evaluation is based on the scores from the test? It just seems like there's a disconnect somewhere. So I guess I want to know, you know, what your beliefs are. I know I've had a lot of teachers that are very, very concerned with this. Mm-hmm. And you as a superintendent, I just want to know if they're coming forth with their concerns or if...
Well, there are many teachers concerned in regard to the assessments being used on the evaluation prior to studying them and seeing if they're reliable and valid. And so we have shared that with the commissioner, and I believe that they are in the process of getting a waiver to the waiver to not have to put those assessments in the evaluation until we are assured that these assessments reflect learning and those. So I do know that. So that's a good question. It's absolutely right. Teachers are nervous about that. The tests are secure tests, so you really want to know what a child has learned. Our educators are involved in with the test writers and testing out whether the questions. We're in a process of advising. We don't create tests, and my doctor is actually in assessment, and I don't think we would want however many teachers are in the state creating tests that we're actually going to determine student outcomes with. There are professional test makers for reliability, validity. Some questions that we ask aren't really valid, you know, and so having the professionals do it, but certainly using our own students and our own teachers to give feedback to that, to direct how those are made is certainly essential. And my understanding is when they jumped off board with Smarter Balance, that was why they did it, because we needed to have more control, if you will, and more input into what our assessments look like. And I have not, you know, seen the assessment. I haven't seen AMP other than just some literature on it. But the thought is that it is an Alaskan test, and they're making it for Alaska.
Well, it just is a huge move away from the traditional way that we did education, where the teachers got to choose, you know, the curriculum. They got to develop and design the test. There was only in third and eighth grade. So, I mean, this is a huge, outsiders are basically, and we don't know what's on those tests. We don't know the FERPA laws. Why don't you explain, do you understand that there's been changes to the FERPA laws?
Which changes are?
Basically, there's been an executive decision to loosen some of those, and there's concerns out there. The hearing's not on that today, but we've had it on it in the past. But they loosen that, and there's a lot of concerns out there about the data and the protection of the students and the family. You know, it's the mm-hmm. Protection of Family Act, basically, and there's real concerns because those have been loosened. And I'm having a tremendous amount of parents highly concerned about, one, online testing in general, two, an outsider developing these tests, three, I know there's concerns because there's recommended data mining points out there on some of these tests, and whether that we have privacy measures and state statutes in place to protect our students and the privacy of their students from these massive. I mean, you every day you could practically read in a paper of some sort of privacy breaches, and these really could be very, very serious to our children. If let's say they did very poorly and it ends up someone hacked in there and it's all exposed, and I'm very, very concerned that this fast forwarding, haste makes waste, and we're fast forwarding these. And that's why I'm going to be talking to the commissioner soon about this. But just fast-forwarding these and not having the safety measures in place to protect our children and making sure that they're not being asked questions that they have no business asking. So anyway, I'm really, really concerned about that, and we are going to be digging much deeper into that in a little bit. But apparently we understand that you're a big supporter of the Common Core, and I'm sure you agree that those are almost identical to the Common Core standards are identical to the Alaska academic standards virtually. I mean, every bit is pretty much fact these days. So is that your position?
Well, you know, in MetSU, we do not say we're Common Core because we're following the Alaska state standards, which is law that we follow. And, you know, when we have lots of concerns in our community. I think our community is one of the biggest you know, sounding boards out there that is saying, you know, what's happening with Common Core. And I know Anchorage has adopted them as their curriculum. We have not. We've taken the Alaska State Standards and then looked at MAT-SU. And we've moved some things around in our own, which is allowed by state law. So we have MAT-SU standards that are informed by Alaska state standards.
How different are they?
I mean, ours are, by law, we have to be with the Alaska state standards. So we are.
And they're approximately 95% identical. There's a tiny, tiny bit of wiggle room. But the deal is the same states Anchorage is taking are the same assessments you're taking.
Absolutely.
It's statewide. And so you can't get away from Common Core. So why would you not be straight up with your people and just say, we're doing Common Core? I mean, that's the truth.
Well, by law, I'm doing Alaska state standards, but we try to share that they didn't, we didn't just think this up and change it, that this is part of a process, and really it, to us it was a process of universities saying, you're not preparing kids, you know, for time. You're not preparing kids, you're not preparing kids, kids are not prepared to come to us, we have to remediate. The result of that conversation was they raised the standards and they raised the rigor. And so, I absolutely have students, my own student included, who is in school right now, one of them, who got caught between one level of standards where the rigor went up, especially in mathematics, to where the expectation of knowledge grew without the years and the matriculation through our school system. So currently, I see in the future our kindergartners, our little kids that we're starting are going to understand that higher level of math that they need to take. And starting from kindergarten, it's just more standards, more information that we're teaching our kids. Kids in fourth grade, my daughter is a junior, and an Algebra 1 to an Algebra 2 class that she took, it's a huge jump. And so we're trying to catch kids up. We actually, in MAT-SU, part of how we're solving the problem is using a lot of online free access to Khan Academy and some other online things so kids understand really how to teach themselves as well, especially if they're going off to college or to the workforce, where if you don't understand something, the content is out there and to assist yourself in finding it out. But we try to tell people we didn't change just because change because we wanted to. We changed as a result of discussions that are happening nationwide. And our belief, especially we know in the math, well, certainly at this point in time with what we're seeing, students are being asked to do much higher level learning at lower grade levels.
And that, you know, that we can get into. We're having a symposium in regards to this. So that's all debatable. A lot of people believe it's not age appropriate. The people are not developed. It's jumping all around. We know the marketing message is greater rigor. A lot of the upper ones, it's debatable if it's more rigor, if it's actually it's much reduced. So, I mean, all this
depends.
I understand the marketing message that you're repeating, but it sounds like you are a supporter of the Alaska academic standards and are fully implementing them and moving them.
As a superintendent of a school district, I am, by law, it is my duty to follow the law in the state, and that is the law of the state.
Well, we don't. The state legislators do not set those standards. So that is via regulation. The State Board of Education does that. So it's via regulation. And so it's the State Board of Education that has passed these standards. The state legislature did not pass those standards. And maybe the law does need to be changed where we actually are the ones, because we are the elected policy setters, and the Board of Education has actually been the one that has done this. So make sure that you understand that it's the State Board of Education, unelected people, who are running away, you know, with this policy on a train so fast that no one can catch them right now. I have deep, deep concerns about. And one of the members said, I don't have time to study this. I'm a volunteer. And I'm like, do you have any idea what you're doing to our students as you have no time to study this? So it's very, very alarming to me. But I do think that all of their marketing message is very, very debatable, and have outsiders come in really through the No Child Left Behind waiver and pretty much use standards, the federalized standards, and now choosing the curriculum and doing these assessments is very, very alarming to me personally, and also to hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people out there that are just waking up to figuring out what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I want you to explain to this APEX. What's this APEX learning that the MAT-SU, my understanding is that it's a way to implement the Common Core digitally in the MAT-SU. So we'd like you to explain,
APEX is an online company that provides curriculum for courses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure about Common Core. I don't look up Common Core with APEX, but they have College Board approved courses. And so initially in our district, we were looking at ways for students, this was about 5 years ago, for students who have fallen behind in credits for credit recovery. And online learning was an effective way to do that. And what we found is that students who actually had access to online learning, they were doing it more because it was a choice rather than just catching up. So approximately 90% of the students in our district who are taking any online course are doing it because they are choosing to get ahead or choosing to do something different. We have courses in English. We have courses in science. APEX, for us, the importance of using APEX other than any individually designed course, number one, when there was in the state of Alaska where anybody could make up a course, there was trouble with alignment, say from somebody designed an algebra one, somebody did something else, students were having holes and missing and actually learning the skills that would lead to calculus or another, you know, mathematics. So we use APEX for the alignment, and what we get good at as teachers is what we're qualified to do is to teach it. And so APEX, we chose APEX for a couple reasons. It is the NCAA approved. There was some trouble with kids and scholarships who took online learning that was not approved, and so some kids were in jeopardy with their scholarships and came back, and that was, you know, publicized in the news a couple times. We also had concern that students who are self-motivated choose online learning more than kids who, you know, really need that feedback from a teacher. So we wanted to have higher level courses, and APEX Learning is for the College Board who does the SATs. That's mm-hmm. the College Board company, is approved. Mm-hmm. The APEX is one of the only approved College Board courses, that College Board curriculum that they actually approve, and we have so many students taking it, and we found that students taking APEX, say, an AP course through APEX or an AP course through our high schools have, and again, our teachers are the ones coaching them through it on the other end, so you have the the course and the assessments, things like that, all built in the curriculum in the APEX, but it's one of our teachers on the other end online.
And see, this is where all the concern is. It's the federal, the No Child Left Behind federal, that set these virtually, the Alaska academic standards are the same as Common Core, within a margin of error. Then they're picking the curriculum, then they're just approving assessments, then now all the ACT, SATs are now aligned to Common Core, so it's really a complete takeover. And when we looked online, APEX, on APEX online description, it says they essentially gear their content to the Common Core. Most people aren't running away like all Alaskans. They're very misleading. They're misleading the people. They're misleading their districts. They're misleading the parents. It is Common Core. Even if you look on a lot of the curriculum, it's Common Core. And so I think that we need to quit hiding from that word. And even APEX, I want to know who paid for APEX. And on their online description, it clearly says that they gear their content to the Common Core.
Correct. And really, you've already made the statement that Alaska standards are quite like Common Core. They were like the standards that the students need to be ready for. And so, of course, you want to teach the content for which kids are going to be tested. The College Board controls all the curriculum for AP. So in order to get college credit for courses, that's always been controlled for over 25 years. So there are already systems that design those programs. Those are third party. Just like when we give our CNA automotive, when we give those assessments, the school district does not control any of that assessment information. When we want to give, we have FlexCore, all kinds of technical prep as well. When we give those assessments, the MATSU doesn't own them, and that gives you the level, and that's what SATs and ACTs are for. They give a level of achievement, and so we don't own those, and we just have to prepare kids to be able to qualify for what they'd like later on in life. You're not going to buy probably any material in today's time. Probably in a couple of years, they're going to get smart and start taking it off. When we looked at our math program, the only math program that we found that would match the standards, so your math program is your materials, then you have standards, and all those things together with your instruction is the curriculum that you offer in your classroom. And so there you'll be hard-pressed to find any materials out there that that are mass-produced without Common Core stamped on them.
And that's my concern. It's a monopolization of education.
It's a capitalization of education as well.
Well, I believe it's monopolization. There's nothing capital when there's nothing competing. So that's
someone's making money off of it. It's my point.
But it's a monopoly. Capitalization is where there's competing thing, and that's why I'm such a huge believer in getting away from all of this. This is a very dangerous road we're going down. In regards to who pays for APEX and how much did it cost?
APEX, we're moving into $45 a student, and they can take up to 7 courses a day. We use it for language classes in our Spanish immersion. We use it for financial literacy courses. We use it for language courses in our district.
Did the give you the money for it? Did the state give you the money for it? I mean, who paid for APEX?
75% of all funds in the Matsu Borough School District are state funds. 25% are local.
Okay, so the state paid for 75% of APEX, is that correct?
Well, if you took our program as a whole and our operating budget, 75% of that is directly from the revenue we receive from our enrollment.
Okay, so it's fair to say percentage-wise the state is paying for APEX, a good chunk. And I also saw something about $500,000 was given for APEX.
We did have, those were, when we created our online classrooms, it wasn't for the curriculum, it was to create cyber centers for which we could deliver. So the state gave us a grant for computers, furniture, things like that to create cyber centers.
Okay.
And that is the state funding formula.
Okay, so
pay for that.
Okay, thank you. And so you know that there's language in House Bill 278 and the intent of many of us legislators that no state funding go toward the implementation or anything having to do with the Common Core, because there's a lot of parents, a lot of people out there that want nothing to do. So the intent of the legislation was to prevent public funds to spending on the Common Core initiative. And so what are your concerns in regards to that? It prohibits BEAD from implementing Common Core or even a program like APEX at this time. So does that bring any concern to you?
And this is in accordance, the department may not expend state money or money received from any other source. I'm not exactly sure in today's day and age, we've established that Common Core is stamped on pretty much everything. And so I'm not sure.
Not the legislature. I mean, the State Board of Education has done that.
So the department cannot spend, I mean, I'm not, other than the state funding formula, the department's not giving MATSU money specifically. Is that what you mean?
Everything goes through DEED, is my understanding, for the base student application. So the base student allocation, none of those fundings, none of that money can go toward the Common Core initiative or standards.
Is that what the policy is?
I know the intention. I know that's my intention of what the legislature was doing. So I'm just wondering, does that raise any concern to you?
I mean, I'm not familiar with this. With the department specifically, my understanding is that the House Bill 278 provided the funds for all of 75% of what we do in the district comes directly from House Bill 278.
And it does funnel through DEED, and I'll be talking to DEED in regards to that. But this raises a serious concern when, you know, clearly the intention was that we don't want to go down the road Common Core when we finally, this freight train who's run off ahead of us, there's many people who are very, very concerned about this, and you see what's going on across this nation of federalization of education. And even you're saying pretty soon it's going to be a complete, there's only going to be strictly Common Core. Where has this been internationally benchmarked that you guys are so excited about this? Where can you point to, or is this just an expensive experiment to you guys?
It hasn't been internationally benchmarked. What it's even the folks that I've read that are anti-Common Core say that's at least it's better than what you had, that it's higher rigor than what you had. One of your concerns, which you had mentioned earlier, was that the higher-end students, they're always fearful of leveling out education, so we're not individualizing for our high-end learners, and that's why we use the MAP assessment to make sure that those kids that are learning at accelerated rate continue to do so. So we opened up the middle college for that. We opened up some other avenues in MATSU for kids that are motivated that can move on.
And I know there's lots of controversy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think at the higher levels they're much lower, and that's not a debate we're going to have here today. A lot of people believe that they're inter-level community college preparation rather than university, so they're really not convinced. We understand the marketing message, but reality is not meeting the marketing message. So, you know, that's a discussion for another day, and I'm actually bringing up experts for that soon. But what's your understanding when the district does poorly on these accountability assessments or, that are implementing these new standards? What's going to happen to your school district? Let's say they don't do well.
We need to figure out, we look at the standards, we look at what kids know and what are they able to do. And if kids are expected to know and do more, then we need to review what we're teaching in the classroom, use experts. We have lots of teacher experts in our schools, and use that to improve learning. I mean, the outcome for kids is what we're concerned about, that when they leave us, they're able to, go into the workforce if they choose, go to college, go into military, and so we need to prepare them for what their next level is. And if part of the next level is being able to reach those goals and those outcomes for learning, that's our job as a K-12 institution.
You think it needs the federal government? You don't think the local people can do that, the local teachers and the local people can be responsible for the jobs that are available in their area? I don't think that the same people in New York, downtown, need to know the same thing as someone in the Village Bush of Alaska. And that's why this whole Common Core concept, I don't believe it'll ever work, but it really raises a concern and alarm to me. We spend billions, so we better be getting something for our money. And I want to ask you, do you think that these standards are outcome-based or process-based?
In the design of them or what kids can do? It would depend on what we're asking kids to do with their learning, whether it would be outcome-based or not. So if they're able to achieve at the next level, then they would be outcome-based if they're able to do some type of performance after their instruction.
So do you see any problems with the standards at all right now?
Oh, I mean, we're caught in the middle of standards jumping rigor, and so we're, as a school district, trying to work with that. Mm-hmm. But the feedback from university and workplace is that we're not preparing kids well enough. I think the reaction to that from the state was to change the standards. They changed the standards.
That are not benchmarked, that are not internationally. I mean,
this
is a crazy experiment, if you ask me. And I just can't believe that we're spending this kind of money on this experiment. And it's not acceptable at all. And all this outside influence is unacceptable.
We'll find out, yeah. Kids will do, I don't see kids achieving at the same level as we had them in standards-based assessment simply because they're going to be harder. They're going to be more difficult.
Are you guys going to be dinged? Is funding going to be pulled? What if you guys do poorly as a district? What's going to happen?
Through ASPE, what happens is that the state gets involved within in your school district. Similarly, NCLB through AYP, at this point in time, I think if we didn't get the waiver, they'd have 95% of schools not making AYP in the state of Alaska, was their estimate.
With all the money they're spending, what have they been doing wrong? I mean, we don't want to face, so we get this waiver and get this complete federal government influence over our schools because they weren't meeting 95%. I mean, I'm sorry, but this whole thing is backwards to me. So in regards to these standards, can you explain the difference between academic achievement and school progress?
If you look at achievement, and this is also debatable by the experts, but I think in this colloquial terms, they're using academic achievement as if I take a test, this is the level for which I reach. I get a score. This is my level of understanding. Progress, of course, is how much distance I've traveled, if you will, in my learning. And really, we look at another term for that is used for growth. We look at the growth of students because students come to us, all kinds of students, and we bring them in, and we start where they are, and we move them on the continuum of learning. And so they also need to look at growth of students, and in our district we talk about growth as if a student's behind, we're looking for more than a year's growth during time, so we need to work with students extra in math and reading, and it's generally the younger kids, to get caught up so that you learn to read to learn kind of item. But we also look at the upper end so that, and we're very careful in our district because we believe that if you're a year in a school, you need to at least grow a year. And many years back, about 8 years, we started studying the kids who were the brightest in our school, and they weren't growing a year for a year, so we realized we weren't giving them what they need. So that growth or progress is something that you want to guarantee. If they're with you for a year, they need to grow a year. If they're behind, we try to get more than a year, and if they're ahead, they still need to grow a year. Just because someone's brighter than someone else doesn't mean they need to stall out. If I have a second grader operating in a fifth grade, and they're with us for another year, then they should be at the sixth grade the next year.
So in regards to these ACT, SAT, you know that the ACT and SAT are aligned to Common Core now. I mean, we know there's this huge influence that's kind of taken over education. What percentage of kids in the state get a four-year degree? So typically the ACT and SAT are for college-bound students. So do you know the percentage?
I am.
All these universities are saying our kids aren't ready.
You know, I mean, nationally, only about 30% of any population has a four-year degree. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure about the state. We did our post-outcome surveys in MATSU. We study that to see where our kids are going, and we study kids 1 year out, 5 year out, 7 years out. We have 48% of our kids go to a 2 to 4 year, some type of degree, and then about another 17% do some type of on-the-job training, 90 days up to 2 years. We take a look at that. So we have, it's on our website, it's called the post-outcome survey data, just to see if we're giving kids what they need, if they're prepared when they leave us.
Right. What my understanding is, in one of the testimonies that I heard, they said 10% of the kids in the state get a four-year college degree, and that's approximately the number that needed if you look at the job. And that's what I would do, education completely differently. I would look at the jobs and job availability and where the growth is, and then match that up to what they truly are, college and career, rather than having this indicator based on a federal indication. I think local control is much, much, much better. But I guess what my concern is why does every student need to take the ACT and SAT if only a fraction of them actually get a four-year college degree? And why in the world should the state be paying for that? It used to be a parental cost, so that's driving the cost up of the state. And what do you think about a cut score with the ACT, SAT?
Well, there's a choice of three tests. It's the work keys, right. ACT or SAT. Mm-hmm. And so students who have no interest, like you said, and perhaps going to post-secondary, we encourage them to take the work keys because we know that our apprenticeships and things like that look at the work keys more. And so that test is in there. The idea about paying for it, I'm not sure the cost. It might be a push with the HSGQE because we did pay for that in the past, which is a totally separate test than the SBAs, given at the same time. I mean, this crazy thing about that is you could pass the HSGQE and not pass the SBA on the same given year. But I'd have to look, and maybe the department is the best place to ask for the cost of those assessments. They are giving one opportunity to every child. I'm sure it'll assist with some families who have not taken that because of the cost. But certainly, you're correct, and you would want to direct students and have career plans for students, academic and career plans, and make those assessments match what they want to do with their lives. And in MATSU, we encourage, there are great livable wages for technical training, and a lot of our kids, that's where we direct them, I mean, to go in that manner. However, Algebra 1 and higher math are starting to, for some apprenticeship programs, are like the IBEW, they need to ensure they take that. So some of the mistakes we've made in the past is not ensuring that kids have the right math for that, and we're taking a look at that because we're working with IBEW and some of the labor unions to know what it is that their kids need because they need to take tests for IBEW.
So, you happy with the math, Common Core math? It's all over the internet. I mean, it's a joke nationwide, you know, Common Core math. There's many, many elements that are a joke, other elements, you know, that people are comfortable with. But Tell me, are you comfortable with a Common Core math?
At this point in time, I wouldn't say I'm comfortable because I don't know enough about it. I know all the complaints we're getting, and so...
I mean, like, more than the past?
Certainly, because we changed our math program in order...
What's your curriculum?
We're using Go Math, K through 8, and it is an entirely different presentation. We had two math programs in the past. One was called Saxon Math, was very traditional. And then we had, and that's one that I'm most familiar with. I taught it in the school that had that and was a principal of the school. And then we had Math Expressions. And Math Expressions, I would say, was a little bit more similar to Go Math than Saxon was. But the materials in Saxon did not match up with the new standards and the level. So the levels weren't matched. We kicked up the levels for kids. So we had to find the textbooks for which the teachers could use with their students to help. Now, some of the features of those textbooks are pretty neat. You know, they have those little scanner things so parents, they can scan their phone, look at a YouTube video on how to teach their child if they're not understanding it. There's login assistance.
Parents should be able to do K-12 math, and if they're teaching it in such a way that parents don't understand, I mean, that's another serious red flag for me. And every single parent that I've talked to, and I talked to a lot of parents, liked Saxon math better. So why in the world we went and did this is another massive math. It's so darn important. And to think that we're going another expensive experiment, unproven, unbenchmarked internationally for some reason, which I'm going to get to the bottom of, is really alarming. But why when something is working, why would we change? And
I think there's some thoughts that it wasn't working is probably my assessment. Some folks really didn't think it was working. So.
But you said you're having a dramatic more increase in complaints now.
For the student outcomes that they weren't achieving at the levels they needed, they weren't being able to.
Your complaints are about that they're complaining that in the past kids weren't learning. It has nothing to do with this new Go Math. Is that what you're saying?
The calls about the math program are specifically that the textbook is set up differently. They don't, you know, necessarily care for the text. Is exactly what you're saying. The bigger picture of why it changed the Alaska standards. I believe that it changed because of the. Achievement levels that we're saying kids
that's
aren't learning.
Debatable.
Right.
I mean, a lot
right.
of people completely disagree. They believe that they haven't looked deep, dig deep. You know, that's a complete debatable, and I'm bringing up some experts to debate that, whether they're age-appropriate. Whether
you just
really,
asked me a question. I was just answering
really
your
are,
question.
You know, whether they are more yeah. rigorous or not, I understand that you know, we've heard that marketing message that they've got all of you guys talking about. Whether it's accurate or not in reality is another thing.
Our parents think it's harder. They think the math that their children are getting is harder, too hard for their children.
But some of them believe it's process-based. It's the way they're teaching, not because, you know, they're not learning the timetables. It's because of this crazy new process. It's not outcomes like, let's learn our timetables and move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. Let's learn how to do this and group this and group that and group this. You know, any examples, it's the way, it's the methodology that the parents are having a frustration with for good reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly going to continue to listen to the parents because that's, you know, I think they ultimately have the responsibility for educating their children. And if we have the parents buy in, and that's why I hate the fact that this Board of Education went way out in front of everybody, got on the freight train, signed all this thing, things weren't vetted, and I could go on and on and on about the putting the cart before the horse in regards to the Board of Education indeed. And it's just a shame that a lot of people are really paying the price dearly right now. And now they're ramping it up, fast-forwarding it an entire year.
I'm a strong believer in math facts, so every Math Sue student will need to know their math facts.
Well,
just so you know. By third grade. It's a mandatory thing.
Well, I'm absolutely, yeah. I absolutely love math, and I actually piloted my kids through substitute teaching very, very heavily for 10 years in the school districts because I saw some of the crazy things that they were doing with everyday math and everything. And I was bound and determined, with my dad an engineer, with my husband an engineer, both my boys wanting to be engineer, they were going to get it right. And I don't think we're getting it right now. So I have serious concerns with this new math program. And just cannot believe that this isn't benchmarked and that it was not more properly vetted, that these standards were just virtually rubber stamped. I mean, it's like, come on, somebody, let's use some critical thinking here. If this is what the whole goal of, why didn't we see it when we implemented these standards? They're virtually They're virtually copyrighted, virtually completely just rubber stamped and put through. And it's just, you can call them Alaska Academic Standards or what. You can put a little comma or little thing in here, but they're virtually Common Core, and no one can hide from that fact.
Madam Chair, can I ask, was K-8 GoMath put in this year?
Yes, sir.
And so it was a full suite, all the way, K-8?
All the programs,
all the schools?
Not all of them. There are some schools that are able to determine their individual curriculum, but as a district-wide adoption, we had the middle school team and an elementary team, about 36 teachers, we started with about 10 textbook companies and looking, and every single one of those textbook companies had Common Core on them, and we couldn't buy a book, and we said we don't want a book that has Common Core. We literally could not buy a book without Common Core on it, but then they narrowed it down to three, and then teachers used them in their classrooms and just tried them out, and then we had a couple parent nights, and then the final, we filled out a matrix, and GoMath was one that both the middle schools and the elementary schools chose. And then high school, of course, you know, those are individual courses of Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2. But we had a different text for Algebra 1 than we have for Algebra 2. And there's a lot of learning that skipped, and that's what we were dealing with. And now it's starting to level out, but our first month of school was very rough for kids learning algebra.
This is really helpful. I mean, I really appreciate you doing this, Madam Chair, and I'm learning a lot. But the reason for my question was pretty low level. I was helping my grandson with math this morning, and I was wondering if it was a goal math problem that I was helping him
depending with. Depending on the school, I could tell you if it was.
This is central.
Okay, so who's they? Who's they that told you could only pick the books with Common Core? Is that Deed?
No, Deed didn't tell us. Individual districts purchase their own materials. Deed has nothing to do with determining Matsu School District's choice of textbooks. We liked the math inside of a textbook, but all over it, it had every single page was stamped Common Core. And we said, we don't want to buy that. We don't like that. We see your math matches our standards in Alaska, but we don't want Common Core on there. And you could not buy. We went to the companies and said, we don't want to buy those, and they said there isn't one. I guarantee because of the trouble across the United States, in a year or two, they will start publishing the same exact textbook without Common Core written on it.
So just deception. I mean, it's just clear raw deception. And I you know, that I completely disagree with. You know, let's call it what it is. Let's not hide from it. You know.
Matsu textbooks have Common Core stamped on them.
Okay. And that's when you said that they would only let us pick one book. I want to know who they was. Was it you're only given one option to purchase from?
No. They would be, we went to the textbook companies after Matsu chose our teacher groups, parent groups chose the textbook we'd like to use because it is an open board process, and said this is a textbook that matches the curriculum the best so that if students need to learn this, this is the best material to teach in order for those kids to learn what they need to learn according to the standards. And we said we didn't like the look of the book because it had Common Core on it. And we were told by the companies there was no other option. They don't have books that have that content that were not stamped Common Core.
Okay. Yeah. And that's
they is the companies who own the books, the textbook companies.
Okay. That's the clarification I needed. Because the ACT, SAT are Common Core aligned, because our standards are Common Core aligned, the AP, AP history, David Coleman, you know, has changed AP history a push. Tell me about that. That's all over the internet. I mean, there's pushback from the left, the right, and this is an issue that people across the board are having problems with Common Core. It is not a one, it's massive. Over 200 pieces of legislation we're trying to introduce to stop what these governors and these commissioners of education, our boards of education, are, you know, just pushing on through, and now they're like, oh wow, what are they doing to our U.S. history through AP history, a push? So tell me about what you know about that. That's pretty serious.
Well, you mentioned it is bipartisan. Folks like it. Bipartisan folks don't like Common Core. I understand that. So there's quite a bit. But what we do, we like to offer advanced placement courses in Matsu School District. And the advantage for kids and with advanced placement is that when they do go to university, they could get college credit, depending on the university. It's totally determined by the university. on an AP course, you can score 1 through 5, a score. Generally, University of Alaska allows you to get credit for scores 3, 4, and 5. Some universities say you can only score 4 or 5 for credit at our university. Yeah, so you know that. But the AP curriculum and the AP test is purchased through the College Board, and they control. So I don't have any, I haven't seen the change in the history. I know it is very different, and the testing is going to be different, but I haven't, my mother is an AP history teacher. I should have a conversation with her about it, but I don't. I haven't seen the differences, and they'll find out on the assessment when it comes out.
Well, as a superintendent, I would highly recommend that you do it. It all boils back down to David Coleman. So you need to study that. There's a few puppets, you know, that are the masters of all of this, and we're all being put in a funnel down to a very specific place. We're losing the autonomy as a state. We're losing power as legislators. Local control is being lost, and I'm very, very concerned about it, and I'm not going to stop until we get to the bottom of this. We are vehemently people that like independence in this state, and I don't consider this independence. I'm very, very concerned about it. And this a push is very, very serious. It's transforming. U.S. history is very, very critical to understanding of how this wonderful nation was built. And to have these dramatic changes are very, very concerning to people all across the board. There's big pushback in regards to. So I highly recommend that you look into that, because what our kids learn about our country is very, very important.
Agreed.
So I know I ask you a lot of questions, but the last thing that I'm going to, and I do thank you.
Oh,
thank
no
you.
Worries.
I am very frustrated with the whole process.
We're just one district in 53 and just trying to answer
I understand,
questions.
But sometimes yeah. It's good for you to hear a little bit different perspective, because I'm not a go-along-to-get-along person. I am vehemently going to fight for those parents, for their students, for the jobs readily available, for the power not to be stripped from the legislatures being blamed for all this when we didn't adopt the standards. That is ridiculous, you know, and the regulations, the assessments. The contracts were signed before the bill even passed. I mean, the cart is constantly being put before the horse. I don't like it. It's terrible public policy. And I'm really, really concerned about the ways that what we're doing to education in this state. And because I love education so much, I'm consuming my time to understand what's going on, who did it, understanding the federal timelines, the state timelines, the district timelines. People are being told there's only one book to buy, and I'm really concerned about the homeschoolers. They are using their own homes, their own facilities. They're not even publicly maintained facilities. They're their own teacher. We're not, and they're losing. They are losing control over education because they're being told that they need to use Common Core aligned items. They're losing a lot of their freedom and having these assessments, like you were just saying, going to a big room and doing assessments when they used to just see the SBAs, which were a couple times, like third and eighth grade, and now they're being done every single year.
In Massachusetts School District, we do not predetermine the math books. Our homeschool parents have multiple vendors and can select. They actually can even create their own programs. We are concerned just in the outcomes that the students, if the students are achieving at appropriate levels, as they should according to the state. We have no concern. We don't get involved with selecting their curriculum. There are approved vendors just simply because of the law in regard to.
Can I get a list of those approved vendors?
They're actually on our website. There's over 500 approved vendors.
Okay, because to me that's all good in theory, but in reality, if they are required to take the same assessments as everybody else, then they're all forced into the Common Core. And to add to that, if they're required to not get, according to 278, which I had this all stripped out of the bill and unfortunately got put back in, if the ACT and SAT and work keys are all aligned to Common Core, then there's no getting away from it. And if they don't do well on these tests, and that's why, you know, the cut score, then they only get a certificate of achievement. They don't even get a diploma.
Those tests don't have cut scores.
Right. I understand that, but I'm saying we didn't get into that. But the bottom line is the ACT, SAT are all aligned to the Common Core, and they are required, and they are looking at the cut scores right now. We had a hearing on this. So what I'm saying is that even the homeschoolers can't get away from this. I'm concerned about them losing their autonomy, and also, you know, that the jobs available in the Bush communities that are available in the Southeast, they could be completely different. I don't think this concept of everybody learning the same thing at the same time with the same standards is the right approach. We're losing our individuality. We're losing our sovereignty. We're losing a lot, and it's very, very concerning to me. So with that, I do want to hear anything possible about homeschooling and concerns, you know, in regards to the homeschoolers. We're going to have IDEA on here next, so they're going to certainly be able to speak to some of this. But the last thing, and I know we're running behind today, but regarding the restraint and seclusion, there's language in House Bill 210 that set up the expectations that any crisis or intervention training must be evidence-based, and that's per statute. And in the regulation seems to say that it's peer-reviewed process. And there's a real concern about that, I know, from my perspective and others, but I just wanted you, if you were comfortable commenting on that.
Sure.
If there's any costs associated.
I'm just going to look which one. In Mat-Su School District, since 1991, we've had a program that was evidence-based called MANT training, M-A-N-D-T.
Okay.
And our administrative regulations since 2008, where we discuss that students who work with students who may be may need to physically restrain them, that you must be trained. Mm-hmm. And so we've got in Mat-Su and taken precautions because we've only wanted student safety in mind and teacher safety, adults who work with students.
Mm-hmm.
And so the seclusion guidelines, they were revised in 2010, and I just looking at the timeline, the new parts for us are the reporting that we have to now immediately report within 24 hours of a seclusion. And we've done that at the school level, but since we have to report to the department now, we have to have the school level feed up into our level then to feed to EED. So that is the biggest change. So, and then the same day report to parents, we need to guarantee that it's done and documented. Teachers do that, but if we then, if a child in a classroom is restrained, we need to be sure that every principal knows so that they can ensure that every phone call was made. So just the making sure that all the processes are followed are some of our issues that we're looking at. Certainly, it didn't say research-based, or there's another part to the law where they kind of left it open where it could be research-based. I read it a little bit, but peer-reviewed and then...
Well, in section 1433.127, it says crisis intervention training. The department shall approve crisis intervention training for the schools, which shall include evidence-based techniques that have been shown effective in the prevention of restraint and seclusion, evidence-based techniques shown to be effective in keeping school personnel safe when imposing physical restraint, and evidence-based skills related to the positive behavior supporting conflict prevention, understanding, de-escalation, conflict management. I mean, that's the, mm-hmm. the technical in statute.
The number three on that of 4AAC06.177, where it says have undergone a peer-reviewed process or have otherwise been the subject of scholarly research.
Right.
My understanding.
The regulation they're mm-hmm. finding, but if you look at the letter of the law.
Oh, okay.
So that's what we're having a problem with. It doesn't appear that the regulation reflects the intention of the statute.
Oh, okay. So
that's why I'm going to have to be talking to Deed about that shortly.
Oh, okay. Because my understanding, I mean, if something is peer reviewed in the scholarly sense, it's research based.
Mm-hmm.
Like it would have to have evidence based. If it's peer reviewed when you write your doctorate or thesis, they're peer reviewed. Yeah. So that's what I understood that to be. But I didn't understand the difference for which you were speaking in EED. We are partnering with a few small school districts, I believe Lake and Penn and King Salmon, because they don't have a trained person.
Okay.
And so we're partnering with them. We have, because we've been doing MANT, we have on-site trainers.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, these new policies for Mat-Su, again, similar to the internet, I believe we are, it's the economies of scale. We're much larger. Anchorage probably, Kenai, larger school districts, Kodiak, probably have economies of scale and have these partnerships and worked out already. But certainly, we've already partnered with two school districts for which we're going to provide to meet this law. We're the ones providing the training to them.
Okay. Are there any fiscal concerns you have with this new
We will
reporting anything, because if they've attached to zero fiscal mm-hmm. not, you just want to make sure that
within the school districts, to train someone, you either According to contract, if you're following the negotiated agreement, in our school district, if we were to ask someone to come on a weekend for training, we would pay them an honorarium. If we had them work with students in their regular job, we pay them their per diem. So we have a choice to do it in the evening or on Saturdays, taking the staff's time. We would pay them an honorarium. So certainly that would cost us. There is a fiscal note to that. If we were to pull them during their work day, because the teachers can choose not to come in the evenings or not to come on Saturdays, we would then use those funds to pay a substitute. So certainly it isn't without a cost.
Okay.
In Matsu, it's already built in, but it every teacher that we pull out is going to cost us.
That's what we anticipated. And with House Bill 140 diverting a little bit, but that's the regulatory review, they're supposed to do impact statements to all departments, to the municipalities, to school districts, to the private sector before regulation is passed. And that's in effect now. It's October 15th. It went into law. And so they're supposed to be getting these tests, and zero fiscal notes aren't acceptable when there truly is a cost to the district. So that's what we're trying to get to the bottom of.
And in our district, you know, a lot of this we would do anyway, but if we have to do more people, then it's going to cost us more. But certainly in smaller school districts, we're not going to pay for our person flying out there. Someone has to pay to get that person on site.
Okay, very good. Please keep us abreast of any concerns,
mm-hmm.
of any issues that we discussed. We are here to listen. We are here to get to the bottom of things. We are here to, empower the districts and empower, the individuals. And so we just really want to know that we are listening. We're listening to both sides of this. And thank you. And we know this was a short notice hearing, and we really appreciate the time and energy. And
you asked me one more question, and homeschool law, what I'd like to make sure.
We would prefer
in Matsu School District not to have, and they did take this out from the previous law, so this is a huge improvement. We would hate to see this go back in. Any kind of stipulation about the amount of courses being core or non-core courses. The way that we operate in the district, for the district office, is if a school is functioning well and doing well, I'm not into the business of the school. So if principals and everybody's taking care of business, we're not changing what really has to happen. And so we want the same to happen with our homeschool parents who are teaching, and if their students are learning, the outcome of our whole system is that they're learning and able to do things. So we would not want the department to put any stipulation that we would never put on our homeschool folks. And that includes taking away funding, any kind of funding, if you score this or you score that. We just let us have that determination at the district level, like any other one of our schools. Our homeschool is one of our schools, and I can determine the funding and the support at every building. I have 45 schools. It is at the district office that we create those budgets and determine that. EED does not determine how much money goes to this class or that, and I would prefer that would remain all the same for all schools, even if they're homeschool.
Thank you. Good point. If you don't mind, one more question, please, from
sure.
Representative Keller.
I think I heard you ask the superintendent for a list of the curriculum available
mm-hmm.
to the homeschool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested. And I'm also very sensitive to the amount of work that you got, and I'm also very appreciative of the fact that you're here and take the time for it. But if it's possible, along with that list, if you could give us the process by which that list is selected and a little bit of history and how that happened as far as in the process. I was involved in it and watched it, and just very mm-hmm. interested in getting something that kind of documents exactly how you determine what curriculum is approved and not approved and why,
sure.
all of that kind of stuff. So.
And some of the troubles represented that we could work through would be similar to that. There's some vendors which were not approved simply because they do have the core of the company is a religious company, but yet we weren't looking to buy religious material. We were just looking to buy math material, and we run into problems there. But just in brief, parents bring forward the vendors, and then they're vetted at the school. And then if anything has a red flag that somebody would say that we were spending money on religious materials, then we would go. But there's some silly rules that even a calculator purchased at a store that happens to sell religious things would be denied. And some of those just don't make sense to us because they're not, we're not teaching a religion, but companies are owned by different facets. So those types of things we've run into, and you may have been familiar with those. But we actually have over 500 vendors, local vendors, statewide vendors, and actually our community supports our homeschool quite a bit.
And that's great. I didn't understand, and you understand my question. I just would like to know, I'd like to see a comprehensive writing on what the criteria is for religious versus non-religious.
And,
all related criteria that are used to approve or disprove.
And
the process. You know.
Yeah. It happens right at the central school.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Thank you. You're very knowledgeable. We really appreciate you being here today.
Yeah. Sorry I couldn't answer all your questions.
That's okay. You did a good job, so we really appreciate it. Okay. And with that, we're going to go ahead and move on to a few people. One, I want to welcome Representative Wilson. I'm sorry, I know you've been on for a long time, and I apologize for not acknowledging you, but thank you for joining us today. With that, I am going to take Rachel, is it Siebert from Wasilla? Are you online?
Yes. It's Sieber.
Sieber, okay. If you would please, please just state your name if you have an affiliation, and then just proceed, please.
My name is Rochelle Sieber, and I'm not really affiliated. I'm calling on behalf of my family and my children, but we do homeschool through IDEA here in the Mattoo Valley, and you've addressed most of my concerns already in the meeting, but I wanted to ask about a couple of other points as they relate to correspondence study programs. The representative from the Mattoo District, the superintendent, she said that there are over 500 vendors available to homeschoolers to select our curriculum, and that is true right now. We have the opportunity to select the curriculum that works best for each of our students and for our family as a whole. But my concern with the new regulation is that it states specifically that curriculum materials for a course of study are appropriate for a student, but it also says aligned to state standards. So my concern for the future is that 500 different vendors that are available to us now will in the future be pared down to be similar to what the superintendent of Mattoo said was their problem in selecting curriculum, that we will only have a few things to choose from and they'll be limited in what we can choose for our students. It also says in the new regulations that our test scores, our student test scores, will change how our contact teachers monitor and suggest curriculum for our students. So my concern is right now we're able to choose any curriculum that works best for our students, but if we're not teaching to the Common Core, as many of us are choosing purposefully to avoid teaching to the Common Core, our students aren't going to perform well on the tests because their curriculum isn't teaching the Common Core, so they're not going to be prepared to test in the Common Core design. And so the new regulations say that if our students score at below proficient or far below proficient, then there will be more monitoring of our curriculum and our education at home. So my concern is how will the new assessments impact our curriculum choices in the future?
Yes, it seems like the screws are getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and we were told for years that it would have nothing to do with curriculum at all. And I kept saying, no, that is
that's impossible.
If you have standards and you have assessments, you basically get to pick the condiments, and that's basically what's going on here. So I am very concerned about this. And we were misled. Many people were misled across this nation, and now they're having buyer's remorse. And I do appreciate it. I know I've received email from you in the past,
yes.
But I would like a specific statement of the exact regulation and wording that you believe would allow the freedom, because we are vehemently independent in the state, and I'm going to protect state sovereignty at my utmost level, And I certainly think this whole curriculum is very concerning in assessments. And the monopolization and the federalization of this is against the U.S. Constitution. So I really, really would like you to continue to interact with my office and state specific concerns, and know that I'll always have an open door policy for anyone in the state that has concerns with this. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'm going to ask Tim Klein with IDEA if he's on the line from Fairbanks.
Good afternoon. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being with us. And if you could pull your mic a little closer and then just clearly state who you are, your affiliation, and then proceed.
Okay. My name is Tim Klein. I'm the director of IDEA.
Thank you. Welcome today.
Thank you. If I can just make an opening statement, then I'll just take questions. I want you to know just a little bit about IDEA that you might not be aware of. IDEA is the largest school in Alaska, and I'm fortunate to be the director of a program where 100% of our student population is not required to attend. Therefore, our focus is much different than that you'll see in a traditional school building, in that we are focused on providing customer service to our families. And that is foremost in our mind whenever we're looking at new regulations, whenever we're looking at laws. And this new law, which was in a big part drafted by Senator Dunleavy, and I had the opportunity to speak to his subcommittee, and I understood the intent of what he was trying to do and what you're trying to do, and applaud that effort. And but when it comes down to regulation, sometimes they miss the mark, and change is hard. And I notice that people struggle to change. So what drives me and our organization is that we are here to help support our parents to educate their children as they see fit. If I can hold that up, it is our guiding principle that keeps us moving in the direction that seems to support us well. And I can, because if we do that poorly, people will vote with their feet and just simply go somewhere else. We do that by helping them, drawing alongside them rather than telling people what to do. We help them and we become a partner with our parents. And that's the way education ought to be. And I can tell you, I've traveled around this country and there is no program like IDEA, and there is no other school system like we have here in Alaska that allows for state funding of a homeschool support program like this. And we are, you can anticipate us to be around for a long time simply because we understand what works. And I understand Common Core is coming at us. I'm concerned about the curriculum choices. My families are very concerned about the social implications of what they're going to do to our history, for example. You've mentioned that. We're concerned about all those things. But where we try to be the quiet giant in the room, because what we are watching out for is when they can change anything they want, but until they tell our parents, you must teach this way and you must use this curriculum, we're going to let them make all the rules they want, and they're likely to have the same kind of impact on our families as past efforts to nationalize some of our education. But we guard those things dear. You'll know when they've crossed the line, because we will come out and be speaking in force against anything that would force our families to teach things a certain way. So by guarding those things and customizing the education right down to the individual child, we actually have the ability to meet the expectations of that parent, and that's our goal right there. And so these new rules with ACT, SAT, or work keys, you know, it's a hoop we have to jump through. The minute they start setting cut scores, that we're going to have a problem with that. But at this point, there are no cut scores, I'm just a lowly teacher here that's working with this homeschool group. I may not be aware that there's this groundswell to set cut scores, but they go down that road, that's going to be a problem. That would be a problem for our families and therefore a problem for me. And, you know, I spend more time listening to my families than I do to the legislature, so I can't quote specific laws and regulations. However, we do study those things to make sure that our that we're guarding our parents' interests.
Mr. Klein, I agree with you on everything, and this is absolutely infringing upon parental rights, and I'm absolutely concerned. The research shows that if parents are involved, it's the number one indicator of success. And if these parents are giving their lives, they're giving up their careers to teach and educate their children, and we're trying to get in there and strip them of choice, of stripping them what is best for the uniqueness and diversity of the students, it's wrong. And I think it's some of the most cost-effective education out there as well. So we want to protect and preserve, especially in the lowering of oil prices and the more regulations that they're throwing on, the challenges that we face with economic development. We're going to face some real serious issues in the head. So we want to preserve cost-effective education, and I want anybody who has an issue, I don't care if it's a joint letter from an organization, to please contact my office. If you are being told what curriculum or how to teach something certain ways, I want to be the first to know about it, because I'm going to vehemently protect parents' rights, states' rights, local districts' rights, and I just really want you to know that my office is going to be an open door and open lines to take your concerns, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, with that, do you have anything else?
I guess, I could speak to several of those things. I don't know how much more helpful it would be, but we just take a different view on many of these things. For example, you talked at length about curriculum and the variety of curriculum. To me, that's a critical piece right now because as Common Core standards are being implemented in all these curriculum companies so they can sell their books, we need to hang on to the curriculum that we've already approved through our school board for our families to use and keep those materials available so if they choose to teach using those materials, they're readily available to them because they're going to become less and less available out on the open market. So we're a little concerned about that issue and working to try and solve that. I don't want you to think that we're not worried about children that are performing poorly on tests as well. Be perfectly honest with you, without us doing a whole lot of anything other than supporting our parents, our children do pretty much like everybody else. We are on tests, and we struggle in certain areas. And for homeschoolers, and if I can make a general statement, which is hard to do with homeschoolers, but they generally, if I had to pick a subject, math would be one that they do struggle in. And so how we draw alongside them is we try and look for solutions that will help answer questions they have as they're trying to teach their children. So, you know, you're going to hear, we're coming up with a lot of great ideas. The early literacy screening that is now required by the state for kindergarten through second grade was a potential lemon for us in IDEA because it was being thrust upon us and we were being told we had to do this on very short notice. And our parents don't like that kind of change. But what we did do is find a tool that allowed our parents to be in the room when the small children are taking an online course, an online test, and then print the results and hand them to the parents there. And what we found was they found that, most people found that very valuable once they understood that it wasn't threatening and there was no consequence for regardless of where their child was. In most cases, it validated what they already knew about their child, but there were some surprises and parents, and that gives us an opportunity, again, to draw alongside and suggest some things that would be easy fixes for these challenges their kids might be having. And so it goes. And I got to tell you, this is my 34th year in education. The first 20 were all in building-based programs, and I have never seen anything that works as well as it works here at IDEA. And it is because of the parental involvement. It's a critical component. It's the way education ought to be.
And I agree with you. I truly appreciate your testimony. And please stay in touch. I will say I'm going to be having a symposium on December 9th and 10th. So please keep your schedule free. And if you can be in Anchorage, that would be great to learn more about these standards and the implications and what impact it is going to have on homeschools, et cetera. So please contact my office if you want more information in regards to that.
Thank you very much.
And let's not break something that's working out there. So thank you, Mr. Klein.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, next, and I know that we're supposed to have Deed on. I have a couple people I'm going to ask to wait, Tara and Malaya. Representative Wilson, did you want to speak now or do you want to wait until Deed speaks?
She's still online. Could someone tell me she's still online?
So, Representative Wilson, do you want to go ahead and speak, or would you rather have me wait for Deed? I don't know if your mic is muted or not.
It was muted, so I would rather wait until Deed presents.
Okay, and please let the moderator know if you want to ask any questions, and my staff can bring it to me, okay, during the process. So with that, is Commissioner Hanley available?
I'm here.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, well, good afternoon. Do you want to clearly state your name and, of course, your title, who you're with?
I'm Commissioner Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development.
Okay, and before I start, Commissioner, do you have any opening statements?
No, I've had the chance to listen in briefly, and I will say that, Dia Paramo is a strong leader for education in the state of Alaska. A lot of people look to the MATSU for innovation and for the leadership that they've taken in providing opportunities for their kids. And oftentimes they think outside the box to get the job done. And examples that have been shared in the past are those APEX courses and CLEP tests and just new opportunities for kids to be ready and successful. So, I appreciate having the opportunity to listen to Dr. Paramo testify.
Okay, and thank you for that. So let's go ahead and move into questions that I have for you. One of the many issues in the legislature concerned with is that 278 provided funding for components to increase internet speed. We don't have a fiscal note attached to this. First of all, why was this not identified as a need?
The fiscal note was attached to the bill itself, and so that funding has already been appropriated by the legislature. The fiscal note on a regulation represents the additional funds that the department would need to implement this. I'm just looking at section 4462195. It clearly speaks to fiscal notes on regulations. So it's a zero because the Department of Education doesn't need additional funding to implement what the legislature put in place.
So how much did this cost?
The legislature appropriated $5 million for this.
$5 million for internet speed?
I believe so, yes. And that was sponsored by Senator Olson.
Is that all 53 districts? Is that the total cost?
That's the total cost for this bill. Dr. Palmer actually spoke well to it. The goal is to try to get all districts up to 10 megabits, a minimal amount of internet speed. The original proposal was 7 million. At the end of the day, it ends up being 5 million. And so I doubt everybody will get up to 5 or 10 megabits, but the goal is to get every school up to 10 megabits.
So do you anticipate going above 10 megabits?
No. This bill was specifically to get schools up to 10 megabits.
Right. Do you anticipate in the future of needing to go above 10 megabits?
Oh, 10 megabits is absolutely a floor. It's much lower than most households have in Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, and Mat-Su. I think Dr. Perano even mentioned that some of their schools have 100. So it's recognized as just a place to start, I believe, and a floor.
Okay, so you anticipate going higher than that?
This was driven by the legislature, and I'm not sure what the legislature would plan in the future.
Well, a lot of the legislature, as you know, is influenced by the department. That's what we do is talk to you. So you influence a lot of what goes on. And so what do you anticipate if 10 megabits is the floor? What do you anticipate the top being, knowing that you're the one that's doing all these contracts, assessments? You can anticipate the needs because you're the department. So if you could please tell us what you think that the cap's going to be or anticipated needs and also the complete total cost and of this statewide for getting this 10 megabits.
This area is one area where the Department of Education and schools in general are consumers and not drivers of this. The statewide broadband task force is actually in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. And so they could speak more clearly to that. So, we've responded. I think that this is a positive step forward to recognize the need for Internet, but I can't speak to that because I didn't drive this. I didn't suggest a number. It really falls more with this particular bill fell more with the vision of a couple of legislators and input from the Department of Commerce.
Okay, so what I guess I'm going to ask you to please provide is the total cost of getting this internet speed up to 10 megabits and what you anticipate the cost to be in the future. And you can certainly work with the Department of Economic Development if you'd wish, but I think that's a very fair question to ask DEED for particularly the schools. So I definitely am going to make a request to you in regards to that.
Well, I'll share that now that it was $7.3 million. Was what was proposed to get every school up to 10 megabits. It was work that was done with the Department of Commerce, with the Broadband Task Force. There was a survey done with schools to what it would take, and it was $7.3 million was the bill, and what I believe is correct.
Okay, so you believe $7.3 million is the total cost to get 10 megabits across the state?
To schools, yes.
Yeah, that's correct, to schools. Okay, thank you. Okay, it says House Bill 278 explicitly prohibits spending of money to implement the Common Core Standards, and yet certain school districts like ASC are in fact fully implementing Common Core Standards. How do you deal with a prohibition of spending on Common Core Standards, yet unrestricted funding go to a Common Core district such as ASC?
There were a couple of versions of that when that first came out was introduced. I believe that you might have been gone at that time, when that was introduced, there were conversations between legislators about will this stop the work we're doing, the what was shared in conversations beginning in House Finance, and I'll just read a quote from the sponsor of that. When she introduced this language, she said, "We have adopted the Alaska State Standards, and we have not adopted the Common Core Standards as written. So if you're going to get assistance to be able to put the Alaska State Standards in place and being able to find curriculum and others to do with the standards that we have adopted, and they are our own standards that we've adopted, so this does not stop the department from going forward with the standards that they have out there." So the testimony that was shared and the questions that were asked beginning in House Finance were basically around putting a hedge between the work that's being done in Alaska and our work that's currently being done with Alaska standards. The department, that's what the department focuses on. We do trainings and professional development for school districts, for administrators, for teachers, on the Alaska standards. We don't do them for any other standards including the Common Core. So it seemed that this was very clear. I had heard conversations, although they're not on the record, that this would not stop Anchorage. This would not prevent Anchorage from getting funding in the future, even though they had adopted the Common Core. I would be surprised if there was the amount of support for this that there was if Anchorage legislators felt that their school district would not be able to be funded because they had adopted the Common Core.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other, I know you took one little special testimony there, but there was a lot more. I worked on this bill for about 91 days. And I know Representative Tammy Olson is here to speak about this as well. But I know that the one of the versions was no state funding may be spent to implement the Common Core initiative. And that was very, very powerful and very, very clear that we as legislators, many of us did not want to go down this Common Core, this federal overreach in education. So I know you can debate one comment here and there, but I was there on many, many, and I know I stripped a lot of this language out in the House education, which truly vetted. We took public testimony, and you can't not go back and look at the testimony in there and the votes. We as a House subcommittee also stripped out these college and career ready, and we talked over and over and over about this. And so you know, you need to look globally, not just at a little snapshot in regards to this. There's strong concerns about the Common Core. And I guess right now we'll say, are we doing Common Core or are we not?
I think that's been a question we've had with the regulatory committee in the past, and again, we adopted the Alaska academic standards. They are substantially similar, as we've said, to the Common Core, but we didn't join the club, which means we didn't buy into anybody else having overreach or say into our standards. We got to determine, we still get to determine where we go.
Okay, and I guess I got a quote from someone else back in 2010 in a recent email that you stated to them that the Alaska academic standards were 97% the same and 3% better. And it's a very, very prominent person that stated this. So in all practical purposes, why are you hiding from the word Common Core? When all our books, or a lot of our books are stamped Common Core, I mean, what is it about the word that you need? It's kind of like having a coat and just putting a different brand on them. Why won't you just state the brand?
Because we intentionally didn't buy the brand. I guess if we want to say, you know, we've all got pickup trucks, but I've got a Chevy and you've got a Ford, I've got a Chevy. I mean, they're both pickup trucks. They're both carry the same. They both have the same engine, maybe, but mine's a Chevy, and there are differences.
What percentage are they different?
Not part of the Ford Club.
What percentage are they different?
I think if we went back to the previous testimony that I've given to the regulatory committee, we would. When I made that statement, we were talking about outcomes that we expect of our students. Are the outcomes similar? Do we expect?
Okay, please answer the question.
I'm trying.
What percentage are they alike?
The last time I testified, we had clear percentages on which ones were changed in both language arts and math. I don't have those numbers in front of me. It's not one of the regulations we have before
but
us.
But
right
it also
now.
Says any other. And so just take a guess. I know we have that testimony, and I know that it was in conflict from one to another. But just tell us the percentage to the best of your memory right now.
I'm going to have somebody look for it, but I believe it was 65. We made changes to 40-something percent of language arts, and I think it was 50-something percent of the math.
Would you consider these grammatical changes or significant changes?
I would say that they're substantial because the stakeholders in Alaska decided that they were important enough to include.
Okay, so you're saying that you made changes to 47% of the English?
I estimated that number. specific numbers now. Testimony that we gave previously, English language arts standards, 42% of them were changed or have differences from the Common Core, and the math standards are 49% have been changed or different from the Common Core. With that said, I will continue to say that the outcomes that we expect of our kids are much more common, much more closely aligned, not aligned but similar, than these changes. But we did make these changes because they were substantial and determined to be appropriate by our stakeholders. But we still have high expectations.
This definitely casts concern. When in one hearing of the task force, you said 95%. In an email, you said nearly identical. From a very prominent person in the community, you said 97%, the same 3-point difference. And now you're saying that they're 49% changed and 42% changed. I mean, that's definitely a serious conflict of testimony.
Let me reiterate, see if I can clarify. At the end of the day, we want our kids to be competitive with their peers around the country, because just to get jobs here in Alaska, they need to be competitive.
That's a different discussion. That's a different discussion. A lot of people believe these are process-based and not outcome-based standards anyway. I just want you to please speak directly to the fact that at one point you said 97%, another time you said nearly identical, in written testimony you said 95%, and then now you're going back to 42% substantial changes and 49% substantial changes. So I need you to ratify. What position is it? This is very confusing to people.
Right, I'm just trying to get through that answer. The expectations we have are very similar, substantially similar to the Common Core. We have stated that in the past. Even so, how we get there to those outcomes, we have made changes based on Alaska stakeholder inputs, with 42% of the Common Core standards changed in language arts and 49% changed in math.
However, the books, a lot of the books are being stamped Common Core. The testing is being aligned to the curriculum. And didn't the Department of U.S. Department of Education have to approve the waiver in these standards?
I have no say over no control over the publishers of curriculum. We don't do curriculum at the Department of Education. Our responsibility is to set expectations. And your question was, did we get approval for our waiver?
The standards, the College and Career Ready standards. Does the Department of U.S. Department of Education have anything to do with those, or is that just fully you?
It was fully
you approved these standards. Is that what you're saying? That U.S. Department of Education had nothing to do with this?
The State Board of Education approved these standards. They were vetted by the University of Alaska, and as such, they were deemed as vetted as by the university as college and career ready.
Okay, so I'm asking you, did the U.S. Department of Education have anything at all to do with this?
No. When we applied for our waiver, we had to do several things. One of them, we had to have college and career ready standards in place. They had been adopted 8 months earlier and vetted. So they recognized that our standards were vetted by our university and were college and career ready. So that was one of the things that we had to have, was college and career ready standards.
Okay, so I understand that. Did they approve these standards or not? Did they accept them as part of the waiver?
They accepted our standards because they were vetted by the university as being college and career ready.
And who at the university?
Diane Hirschberg was the one that initiated the work. She is with the university. She's also with ICER, which is a function of the university. She took that and had conversations with several professors as well as some of the technical institutes.
Okay, Representative Wilson has a question for you. Please, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify the discussion we had in finance. I did make that statement, but the statement back that we got from Commissioner Hanley was, we didn't have to worry about any money being spent on Common Core because we had Alaska standards. Now, of course, we have at least one district that has adopted the Common Core. So I guess, you know, my question now that we know that a district has adopted the Common Core, would not a student allocation come into play now, whether or not they got that because they did? And the second question is, because they were allowed to adopt the Common Core and you could only adopt standards that are more stringent than the current ones, are we saying now that Alaska standards are not as stringent as the Common Core standards are?
The Anchorage School District adopted the Common Core prior to our adoption in June of 2012. So they had already adopted the Common Core when the legislature had this conversation during the last session. My conversations and my testimony was this would not stop the department's work because it says that the department will not spend money. But it surely didn't seem to be my intent or the legislature's intent to have local control and tell districts that they couldn't adopt a particular curriculum. The fact that districts, that the Anchorage School District adopted the Common Core, because our state standards are listed in regulations, they are the requirement for districts to address with their students. And so what Ed Graff has testified, Superintendent Graff has testified, and we have talked to him about, is that they do a crosswalk. They do a crosswalk between the Alaska standards and the Common Core. And while they teach, since they've adopted the Common Core, they teach to the Common Core, they also recognize the differences and have to address those in addition to the Common Core.
Yeah, and see, you were telling all of us we weren't doing Common Core. And many, I think I've talked to at least 10 legislators, but you were saying we weren't doing Common Core. So, you know, if it's 97% identical or 95%, and then I see you say substantial changes, and that is completely debatable. But we were being misled. And I also remember another time where you said we're not doing Common Core, so you wouldn't have any issues with not spending money on Common Core because we're not doing Common Core, yet there's pushback all across this state. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to and how many concerns there are that they're being forced to buy curriculum based on the Common Core. The assessments that Anchorage are doing are Common Core. I mean, the media is all over that. And then you're saying that we're not doing Common Core, but the tests are based on Common Core, and the same assessments that they're doing in Anchorage, they're doing statewide. So, you know, I think that you need to own it and come outright and you know, tell the people of the state that we are doing Common Core and be completely upfront with the alignment to the Common Core, and that the assessments and of course curriculum is ended up being selected because of the assessments. And so it's very, very important that this was an entire package deal. I know that we were told that you guys would never. But the assessments that you guys are choosing are having to be aligned to the Common Core. So I just wish you guys would just come straight out and tell the people of Alaska what's truly going on and not change your testimony from 95 to 97% nearly identical to 42% change and 49% change. It's very, very confusing to legislators, and it's very, very chosen. And maybe what the real issue here is we need to change statute. Where we as legislators do get to approve the standards and truly have local control over this.
Madam
Chair,
The only thing I would say is that our standards and our assessments are not aligned to the Common Core. We're actually having them custom made, having our assessment custom made for Alaska, with Alaskans being involved.
Okay, so you're stating now that our assessments are not aligned to the Common Core.
I'm saying that the assessment that we are working on, the AMP, is aligned to the Alaska standards with Alaskan educators helping write the items.
Okay, so they're not. You just said you're not aligned to the Common Core. I just want to make sure that was your statement, because last time you said we're not doing Common Core. You know, we had one of these other testimonies in the internet. I believe it was Marcy Harmon. She said we're not doing Common Core, and that was like days before my last testimony in August.
Right. So since we're not doing the Common Core, and so our assessment is aligned to the Alaska standards and is customized for Alaska. And I'm speaking about the AMP.
Oh, I know. I know the AMP. Trust me. And in regards to the BSA, all this funding comes through DEED. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you send it out to the districts?
Correct.
Okay. You as the department are specifically, you know, prohibiting in this regulation to not spend any money on Common Core, but it's being funneled through you. Isn't that virtually the same thing?
No, the base, the formula that we distribute to school districts is based on a student count, and then basically, aside from very few restrictions, like 70% of it needing to go to instruction, there are local decisions made on how that is spent to best meet the needs of their students. It's a local control issue. So,
but it also says you, the department, may not specifically be spending money to implement the Common Core, but you're sending money to someone who is implementing, and to me it seems like that's virtually the same thing, and so it's in prohibition of what the regulation and the statute says.
Well, we don't spend the BSA, so we don't spend that money. We provide it to districts to meet the needs of their kids. Are you suggesting that we would maybe stop sending money to Anchorage?
Absolutely not. I'm just specifically addressing a regulation that you're putting forth that says DEED cannot spend money on Common Core.
That's a statutory provision that was put in HB 278.
Right, I understand that, but what usually a regulation interprets the intent of legislation, and it looks to me like it's almost identical. So I don't understand what statutes trump regs anyway. But I don't understand why you need this regulation in the first place if it's identical, the wording.
Honestly, I looked at the intent of the legislature, and I looked at not only this administration, my term here, but future commissioners coming in. And we wanted to clarify what money is. And if you look at that regulation, there's only one very small difference. They are the same when it says, in accordance with, the department may not expend. Now, the statute says may not expend money to implement the set of standards. This regulation says the department may not expend state money or money received from other sources to implement the set of educational curriculum standards. This regulation simply clarifies what money is, and so that if I couldn't suddenly go out and find grants to say, well, this isn't state money, this is a grant, and start, you know, supporting the Common Core, I think this strengthens the statute, not only for myself, but for the people who follow me, to make sure that it matches up with the intent of the legislature.
Well, I can tell you that in the emails I sent to my fellow colleagues, my intent was to spend no state money on the Common Core. Districts want to go out and do that on their own, that's one thing. But as a state legislator, I can certainly speak for myself. My intention of getting that in was the entire initiative, the federal initiative, and I know you guys can talk all you want that it was state-led and all that, but I disagree. The bottom line is my intention, and loud and clear, and you know this over and over again, is to not spend state dollars on the Common Core initiative in any fashion, period.
Got it.
Many other legislators I talked to, you were telling them we weren't doing Common Core, which to me, it's 97% identical or virtually identical or 95% identical, and the curriculum is stamped it. I mean, that's smoke and mirrors. And I think we need to come out and either, you guys need to say we either are or not, because you're creating massive confusion at homeschooling, massive confusion on our school districts, and it's just not fair. We're hiding behind a new name, same thing, a new brand, and I'm very, very concerned about that.
Please
address now that regarding the new regulations on district accountability, what was the need for the new accountability program?
It was a simple fix. I'm grabbing my accountability reg here. When the legislature Previously, the work keys assessment was required in 11th grade. And we heard that, well, some students are planning to go to college. They know what college they're going to go to. They don't need the work keys. And so the legislature chose to give them a choice. The governor put it in. The legislature approved the option of work keys, ACT or SAT. And so when we developed our ASPE scores, the biggest change here is if you look down the first page on E, well, actually F, we had 2% for participation in the work keys assessment. Well, that's because it was required. And so we were giving credit to districts for students participating in the work keys, only 2% of the total. But now that it's optional, it would punish districts for allowing students to take a different assessment. So if you look, we simply moved that 2% up to E, college and career readiness indicator, changed that 8 to 10%. And so that's primarily what you'll see throughout that regulation. The jury exemption on the second page was already in place, but what it's in place in statute that DEED must allow for a jury exemption by teachers in low-performing schools, and we just simply had to identify what determine what a low-performing school was. It used to be based on AYP, and now you'll see that it's identified as a one- or two-star school. So the statute is the same. This just helps us to identify what a low-performing school is.
Why did you need the waiver in the first place? That basically you needed to have these college and career-ready standards. Why didn't you just stick with the No Child Left Behind? What were your concerns?
The largest concerns were that by this last year, we would have, all of our students, 100% of the students, would have had to be deemed proficient, and that all of our schools essentially would have been deemed failing. No matter what levels of success these schools had, they would have to write school improvement plans. Even if 90% of their students were proficient and they were doing very well, And it just seemed like an erroneous model. When I talked to principals, I talked to teachers, they didn't feel that there was any way to address, you know, to get to the point of proficiency. The other thing it did for us is it allowed us to remove some of the restrictions that we had on some of our Title I money. When a school is deemed not proficient for so many years, there are restrictions on how that Title I money is used. By changing our rating system to the ASPE system, we had more flexibility to more appropriately use our Title I funds.
What percentage of the total funds are federal funds?
Total funds in the Department of Education?
Correct. What percentage is the federal money versus the state versus local?
I just need, so money that flows to the state or to districts? Some federal money
total
flows straight to districts.
For K through 12 education, or you can even go pre-K, through 12 education, what percentage comes from the federal government, what percentage from the state, and what percentage from the local district?
Probably about 8 to 12% comes from the federal government.
Percentage from the state?
I would have to go back and look at our total budget. So if 8 to 12% comes from federal, I know local contributions are in a little over $200 million, but I don't know what percentage that is. We're looking at some paperwork here now. Okay, so we've got about 13% in federal funds.
And that includes all the Title I?
Yes, Title I is all federal, yes.
Mm-hmm. State percentage?
State, we're looking at about 86% of our budget is general funds.
Okay, and then local?
Well, local is not within our budget, really. If we looked at 100% state budget, we would have federal, general, and a very small 1% of some other funds, but local contributions would be outside of that.
Okay, I'm going to jump back up to, you said that all students had to be deemed proficient by 2014, and you said all schools would be failing. I mean, didn't you know this? And so you basically needed to get this waiver so all the schools didn't look to be failing. And so I guess where I'm going with this, we only get 13% federal money, roughly 86% state. So the problem is that the tiny bit of funding we get is dictating how we spend these state dollars. And first of all, explain to me, why would all our schools be failing? What were you guys doing wrong that everybody would be failing?
The fact that 100%
billions of dollars spent, billions and billions, right, and billions spent.
The fact that a school could be 95% proficient, they could have 100 students and 98 of them would be proficient, and they would be deemed failing because two students, for whatever reason, a broken home, alcoholism, substance abuse.
We don't need to go down all these roads. Are you just saying that all the schools would have been failing, you said, and that's why you wanted to go for this waiver? And you go for the waiver for the federal funds, is that correct?
No.
For the waiver?
We went for the waiver because under AYP, the requirements were that all of our students would have to be proficient. And essentially all of our schools, there might have been a very small school that had 10 out of 10 kids proficient or something, but essentially all of our schools would have been deemed failures. So it didn't sacrifice money.
By who? By the federal government? By AYP?
By who what?
The AYP, the annual yearly progress, you're stating that all these schools would have been failing.
Correct. Under the previous No Child Left Behind system.
Correct. I understand that. And so, therefore, because all our schools were failing, even after we spent billions of dollars over, you know, the whole time that No Child Left Behind was in, you wanted to get this waiver. Why do you need this waiver? Is this waiver, could you just say, hey, we're going to do it on our own? Why do you want this waiver? Is it for federal funds? Let's just say we didn't take federal funds anymore, then what would be the outcome there?
Right. I'll go back and say that I didn't say that all of our schools would be failures. I said that they would all be deemed as failures. And the difference is, and the frustration that I would have, is that we've got schools that are doing very well, and yet based on this 100% rule, that every child to be proficient, they would be called failing, and I didn't think it was accurate. So we got out from under that. And my goal was to put in place a more accurate and honest system that gave us a better measurement of our schools. But funding wasn't tied to it. The use of our Title I funding we had more flexibility with the use of our Title I funding, but we wouldn't have sacrificed funding if we didn't get the waiver.
How much is Title I funding? How much Title I funding do you get?
I don't have that off the top of my head.
Approximately. What percentage of this 13% federal funding is Title I?
Well, not all of the federal money is Title I, but I'm going to guess this is truly an estimate of $60
million. $60
million? Right.
Tell me why you wanted this No Child Left Behind waiver. You said that so we could have just not taken it. It had nothing to do. We still would have gotten our money. You know, the federal funds, so really the No Child Left Behind waiver, what purpose? Why did you want that?
I think I've stated it, but let me try it a different way. I thought it was wrong to say that every one of our schools,
okay,
no matter how...
I guess, so you didn't do it for funding, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so we ended up implementing these new college and career readiness assessments, these new college and career standards, and all this for no money, just because the federal government wanted you to do that.
No. The standards and the standards are not tied to our waiver. The standards were done before the waiver ever came into place. We had our standards in place. We've been working on those for 2 years. So those came into place in June of 2012. The waiver came after that, but not, we didn't do our standards to get our waiver. We had our standards in place that allowed us to get our waiver. They're not connected in that regard.
Okay, so what I'm asking, so why did you end up, excuse me, guys, the federal funds, was there anything tied to getting those federal dollars at all?
Anything tied to the federal dollars?
Was there any requirements, any mandates at all whatsoever on getting that federal funding? And was there any mandates put on the state at all in any fashion for getting the state, getting these federal dollars? And if we got them, let's just use an example. Like, if you do Medicaid expansion, we're going to pay 100%. Well, next year we're going to pay 90% or whatever. So you had to meet all these requirements. Tell me, what kind of mandates were put on the state to get this waiver? Was any mandates put on the state in any fashion to get this No Child Left Behind waiver?
Not tied to funding. We had to have standards in place, which fortunately we already did. We needed to connect teacher evaluations to student learning, which we already were moving on. We've been working on that for over a year. And we need to have an accountability system. If we were going to get rid of the AYP system, we had to put in our own accountability system. And those are the requirements to get the waiver.
So these new standards that you developed supposedly 2 years before started working on them, you weren't doing this in anticipation of the waiver at all?
Correct. That waiver hadn't even been mentioned. The waiver is a very unique situation that's happened with the U.S. Department of Ed. So, no. That's correct.
So can you please help me understand the difference between the academic achievement and school progress? One, I believe, is a snapshot, and the one is a progress over time. Is that correct?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay, it says, can you please help, describe the difference between academic achievement and school progress? We're talking about the accountability regulation.
Okay. Are you looking at a particular page? Oh, I see what you're saying. Under the academic achievement and school progress. So academic achievement is a function of proficiency. It is how many of our students are proficient. But we recognize that one of the flaws we felt in AYP was that all students had to get above the bar. And no matter how close they were to it, if they didn't get above the bar, they were deemed failing. We want to recognize that we're trying to get all our students to the proficiency level, but we're also mentioning that we want to recognize school progress, which is growth towards that proficiency. So take a school in a high poverty area. Take a school that's very low performing. And let's say only 20% of their kids are proficient. If they're moving their kids up the bar and suddenly they got 40% of their kids proficient, or they're moving them towards proficiency but not quite where they need to be, they should get credit for that. So the difference is progress towards proficiency and the number at proficiency.
Okay. So I'm gonna jump back up to what we were talking about. It's still all related to this new regulation about district accountability. It's been, was part of the reason for developing the new district accountability standards to make sure we were in alignment with the No Child Left Behind waiver that the state received?
Well, to get out from under AYP, we needed to develop our own. And so we developed... Yes, we developed our own to get out from... Yeah, it was better than AYP.
So what happens if a school doesn't meet the requirement?
Well, we have, it's a 5-star rating system.
Right, I know. I wanted it to be letter grades, but yeah, go ahead. Just like
that's
the kids get, but what happens if a school doesn't meet the requirements?
That's what happens. They get rated on a scale of 1 to 5, and we focus particularly, we recognize and reward students, schools that are at the top end, and we help support schools that are in the the 1-star range.
Okay, let's say they're a 1. What are you going to do to them?
We connect with them. We try to get some understanding of why the one. sometimes with small districts, small schools, it can be a huge variation if one student, you know, leaves or something. But we work with them to find out why, and then if there's something we can do to support them through through coaches or mentors or state support, we do that.
So, in regards to what part of the college and career readiness indicator, we talked about that as well. The college and career readiness, it means SAT, ACT, or work keys, and you know I stripped that out of the bill, so you know clearly what our intention, and the House Education Committee stripped that out of the bill, the SAT, ACT. What percentage of our kids are getting a four-year college degree right now in the state, approximately?
I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay.
That's why we have the work keys still in place.
There's a question I want to go back and clarify this a little bit. Commissioner Hanley, thank you for taking time to call in. One star is as low as a school can go. Are they a failure? Is there anything that where we is a line they cross and the school board or the rating system says the school is a failure?
There isn't. You know, when I first came on board here at the department, we had a system of school interventions, and we had intervention districts, and what I found was that it really set up a system of conflict and strife of trying to work with them. So with our 1 to 5 star system, with schools that are truly struggling, we provide additional support, and what we have found the last couple of years is that districts have actually really appreciate the model with people coming in and working with building capacity with their teachers to, and they've asked for more. They've asked for those teachers, those support coaches to come back. But we don't call them failing. It's just a 1 to 5 star.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to jump backwards just a little bit from our previous hearing on assessments. It said, last hearing, you were unable to provide the guidelines when we talked about the cognitive abilities and things like that. But in Appendix D, I'm going to get a little bit in the weeds here, but in Appendix D, the contract policy for accommodations were due. If you look at the AAI contract from Kansas, who we're doing the testing through, they were due on August 1st. However, you could not provide them to us at the hearing, and I believe it was August 14th that we had our hearing. Now, on your DEED website, these draft guidelines for accommodations are part of Regulation 4 AAC 06775, AAC 06721 through 724, and they appeared in October of 2014. Were the draft guidelines on these assessments part of the information that was submitted in AAI to August for the design of these assessments?
No, those are the, yeah, I'm going to let Morris.
This is Deputy Commissioner Les Morris for the record.
Welcome.
Thank you. The guidelines that you're speaking of, I believe, are the participation guidelines, and those aren't something that the test company uses in designing the test. They are the... they're what districts use to figure out which accommodations that they provide students with special needs, either in special education or English language arts. And so they're really to help work with the special education students when they take the assessment so that they can be appropriately accommodated based on their disability or on any limitation they might have because of their English language proficiency.
Right, so we did have a memo from legal. I did not make that public, but my question to you is, were these guidelines given as necessary to AAI when they developed these new assessments? That's my question, yes or no?
These guidelines are, they really aren't needed to build the assessment. They're actually needed to build appropriate individual education plans for students so that they can take the assessment.
Okay, so explain to me, so is the answer yes or no? I mean, these were not submitted to AAI?
No, the state board has yet to actually approve them, but AAI doesn't need them. They certainly can look at them. There are reasons why AAI would need them at the end of the day. For example, if we decide there is something in those accommodations that we don't want students to be able to do. For example, let's say we decide students can't use a highlighter function that might be on the computer. Then, of course, AAI would need to know that so that they would not make that a function of our test. Outside of that, AAI really doesn't need those other than making sure that accommodation is available on the test or is not available. It's the state decides what those are working with districts.
Okay, I guess I'm going to jump to just a different question. Basically, what I'm trying to get to the bottom of is there was a $700,000 increase in the contract to AAI. Can you explain why there was a $700,000 increase in the contract?
The only difference there actually isn't a difference. I think there was a technical error on the original issuance of the contract. So the change was an amendment to correct the original the original price amount that was put in the original RFP.
And that's a huge, huge technical. I mean, that's massive. I mean, that's a lot of money. It's almost $750,000. Please explain what happened there.
There was a technical error. Someone made an error,
but
it was never a dollar. It was never a dollar figure because the amount of the RFP was issued with the dollar understanding in the final RFP as amended. So it isn't additional dollars needed at any point. It was really an error made in terms of a typographical error that was corrected and fixed. It doesn't represent any new need for any additional appropriation.
Well, that's a big typo, $750,000. I hope you guys don't do this regularly, because that to me raised a huge, huge red flag. And I get House Bill 140, as you know, is in effect now, and it requires that you do assessments of not only your department, but other departments, and all the costs associated in aggregate to the private sector. And, of course, that would be including municipalities as well. And so I want to know, have you had a complete cost analysis of Common Core implementation, the assessments, this Internet speed in its entirety, because it is a requirement for regulations now. And I don't see one here.
Well, we don't have any regulations out to implement the Common Core. Or Common Core assessments, but October 15th is the effective date for that bill, and so any regulation that is posted after October 15th is required to go through that process.
This is a regulation out right now, and in my interpretation, I would like you to explain, are you going to apply this House Bill 140 to these regulations?
We don't anticipate it because it's clearly not required for regulations that were posted prior to October 15th.
One second, I'm going to have Jim Pound speak to this briefly.
A regulation that is proposed is not filed. And in order for it to be filed, it's going to have the budget that's required by 140, because 140 supersedes the filing of these regulations.
We will double check with our counsel, but we've already had conversations that if they're put out for public comment prior to, because we had this in mind, and do we need to do this process? And we were counseled that we didn't. But we will follow up.
Well, we are going to personally request this. I believe House Bill 140
should be applied to this, and if it's not, I'm going to make a request before this regulation, and I will be following with letter to you and to the governor in regards to this. People have every right to know how much this Common Core Alaska academic standards are costing the state, what mandates, because you keep denying there's any mandates from the federal government, and that's hard to believe. We don't know the cost of the internet speed, and you know, there's a testimony that is against previous testimony. There's just lots of confusion in regards to this. This is serious. This is impacting our local control. This is impacting our homeschoolers. This is impacting education in dramatic ways. And I also want you to explain to us why you fast-forwarded these assessments 1 year, from the 2015 to the 2014. I mean, you're putting a lot of districts in tailspins right now, and I'd like to know why.
I don't feel like we have fast-forwarded. I know we changed the date on the regs because our original set said 2016, but all of our districts have known about the 2015 date for at least a year and a half now. And so when we changed that in regs, in my mind, it was just a clerical error. Not a clerical error, a clerical fix. To match up the date with what all of our districts knew and what we are working towards.
So here they don't think we're doing Common Core because you're telling them we're not doing Common Core, but yet they're having to pick from selection of lists that's Common Core material, yet the assessments are aligned to the Common Core, and all these standards are fairly new. They're being implemented. What year, was it this year that they were in full implementation, the Common Core standards across the state? The Alaska Academic Standards?
Well, I'll just go back and clarify that our assessment isn't aligned to the Common Core, it's aligned to our standards.
Yeah, and there's debate there, tremendous debate there, but for all practical purposes, I am choosing to use Common Core and Alaska Academic Standards intermittent with the same. And so with these assessments, please explain yourself. What year were these standards in full implementation?
They were fully adopted in June of 2012, and districts then had the responsibility to implement them into their districts.
So what year is your requirement that they be implemented in? Was it the 2013-14 year, 14-15 year? When did you expect them, or did you expect them to turn on a dime if you adopted them in June of 2012 to have them implemented in 2 or 3 months later when school started, or in August of 2012 or 2013? When did you have them implemented?
We didn't specifically speak to when we spoke, but once they were in place, they were the new Alaska standards that districts had the responsibility of working on their curriculum reviews and setting a plan for moving towards the implementation of new strategies, and that may include new curriculum to address the new standards.
Okay, so you're telling me you guys adopted these Common Core standards.
No, we adopted the Alaska State Standards.
And then within a year or so, you don't know when, it's just random, maybe immediately, you required them to implement this new set of standards. They had to choose new curriculum and then the assessment. So within 2 years, virtually, of the time that you guys adopted the standards, you were asking assessments to be done in 2014, so June of 2012, to August of 2014, you know, the assessments are already being, you know, in trial basis.
It's actually the spring of 2015, so it's 3 years that those assessments will be given.
Okay, so you guys are not doing assessments in 2014.
We did them last year in the spring of 2014, but they were the SBAs last year.
Correct.
So
this year they're teaching to the assessments, because you give the assessment based on what they're teaching during the year. So you adopted these in June of 2012, and then you're assessing them on them in the 2014-15 school year.
Yes, April of 2015.
Correct. And you think that you the fast-forwarding of these, when the original regulation said 2015-16 and now 2014-15, 15, in that short a distance from the time that the Board of Education adopted these, it's virtually a two-year period from the time that they have to implement this fully. And you don't think that's putting them in a tailspin at all?
I think it's closer to 3 years, but I think any transition to higher standards is going to be a challenge. No doubt, whether we do it in 2014-15, 15-16, I think it's going to be a challenge. But I also feel that there's an urgency for the sake of our kids to not set them up for needing remediation and not being well prepared.
You were setting them up before for that.
Well, I think we were saying that they were getting high scores, and yet we were finding out from the university and from employers that they weren't ready enough. Too many of them needed remediation.
You know, this whole college readiness indicator, the SAT, ACT, you know, I stripped all that out of the bill, and I still have real issues. Why is the state paying for the SAT, ACT, and workies? I understand going down the fact that high school qualifying is no longer there, but why, when I believe, if I recall, about 10% of our students get a four-year degree, yet you're forcing all of them to either take an SAT, ACT, or workies, which now the state is paying for. One, I want to know the cost of that, and I do believe that is a requirement now for you. And even if it's not a requirement, I am officially requesting it, and I will FOIA it if necessary if I don't get the information from you. But I want to know the costs of to the SAT, ACT, and workies, including everything in its entirety of proctors and everything in regards to that. And if they are aligned to Common Core, the college and career readiness, but why, one, is the state paying for these? What is it? Is it part of the No Child Left Behind waiver at all?
No, and the Department of Education hasn't put forward any regulations in regards to that. That was statutory. That was in HB 278. That's what the legislature chose to move forward with, to provide choice instead of just...
Well, I am part of the legislator, and I had these tripped out, so please don't speak for me.
I can speak, I think.
I mean, you took one little quote out of one little testimony, and I don't want you saying, because I disagree with this wholeheartedly. I do not believe the state should be doing this. I believe the homeschoolers and many, many other people who don't want that, you guys are hiding from this Common Core, which we're doing, you know, you're hiding from it. But these are Common Core aligned tests that we are paying for. They're Common Core aligned assessments. And I just want to know, if you're just doing this on your own, you asked for this to be put into the bill. I certainly didn't put it in. You and the governor did this. And I certainly want to know, clear as day, this has nothing to do with the No Child Left Behind and nothing to do with the No Child Left Behind. Is that correct? Waiver.
It has nothing to do with the waiver, and it truly was.
It's a college and career readiness indicator. I mean, it has nothing to do with the waiver in any fashion.
Right. The governor
you and the governor want to do is pay for ACT and SAT and workies tests that are aligned to the Common Core. And if you don't take one of these, you only get a certificate of achievement. You don't get a diploma if you don't take one of these. But
and that is what
not,
the legislature voted on. That's what the legislature voted on, and I know you disagree, but by an overwhelming majority.
What you wanted us to do. I was there, Commissioner, and so you know you need to be clear that this is something that you were behind. This is part of you, and we had this discussion over and over and over and over again.
Well, I was very supportive of it. The governor put it in 278, and I believe that the legislature proved that they were in agreement with it. I mean, they voted for it overwhelmingly.
I didn't vote for it, and I know we had 100% voting no before. So don't skip history. There was 100% no vote on the House floor for part of this, because we tried to strip it. We actually had to go to conference committee because this raised so much conflict. So please don't skip around in history. This was very, very controversial, but. Please state, do all students have to take an ACT, SAT, or workies to get a diploma, including homeschoolers?
They need to take one of those, and the homeschoolers, previously
they're being forced to do Common Core, in other words.
Statutorily,
yes. Because are all aligned to Common Core.
I won't speak to that. I'll speak to the fact that, yes, statutorily
well,
they
you can
do.
Go on the website. I have an entire documentation. I passed it out at several of my hearings in Juneau that they're completely aligned. So, and that's where the concern is with IDEA and a lot of these homeschools is that, you know, they're going to be forced to learn a curriculum, and their parents are using their own homes as the education. They're maintaining them. They're using their own teachers. They're everything on their own. Yet a curriculum and alignment is being forced upon them that they're not comfortable with.
They can continue to take the work keys, which was previously in statute.
And I understand that, but the bottom line is work keys is aligned to Common Core as well. So, okay, so the legislature is obligated from here on out to pay for these tests, even if a student has no college plans or post-high school aspirations. Is that correct?
There was a fiscal note attached to the bill.
That's not the question. That's the next question. This question, the legislature will be obligated from here on to pay for these tests, even if a student has no college plans or post-high school training aspirations, correct?
Correct.
And you were saying this has nothing to do with the waiver and nothing to do with No Child Left Behind. This is strictly what the Department of Education and the governor wanted to do.
And the legislature, yes.
Yeah. Don't include me in that because I passing disagreed.
The other part
and
of the legislature.
There was a vote of 5-2 in the House committee to remove that and then a vote of complete no in on the House floor until it went into conference committee. But anyway, do you know how much the total cost of these ACT, SAT, and work keys are going to cost the municipality, the state, any other agency? What is the total cost going to be?
The fiscal note was attached to the bill and is
$525,000.
This is fiscal note number 36.
Okay, so this is on an annual basis.
Yes.
I'm gonna move on. I know we're quite a bit over, and I do thank you, Commissioner, for staying with us. I know you were in a Board of Education meeting, and we tried to keep testimony long and wait for you to get online. So I do thank you for being here right now, and also any other staff that's here, and all the moderators and recorders. In regards to the new restraint and seclusion regulation, there's language in House Bill 210 that sets an expectation that crisis intervention training program be evidence-based, and I have the statute directly in front of me, and the proposed regulation expects the programs to be subject to peer review process or otherwise scholarly research. Can you just say, is there any concerns here? Why don't we just keep it evidence-based as written in the original bill, or can you explain to me what the regulations, why the regulation changes are?
Those are two recognized methods of determining evidence-based. A peer review process, and I think Dr. Pramel spoke to that as well, or subject to scholarly research. Those are two identified ways, two recognized ways of determining a solid, in this case, program.
Okay, I guess evidence means it's more outcomes-based. It's a proven method where one can just be looked at by a peer. To me, it's very different. I mean, I did research. I had to follow research and place research grant and look at this kind of stuff pretty carefully. And to me, it has two different meanings. But I just believe that we need to clarify this with you. That I'm reading Section 1433.127, Crisis Intervention Training. The department shall approve crisis intervention training programs for schools, which shall include training in evidence-based techniques under one, evidence-based techniques two, evidence-based skills, you know, in three. And so, to me, just explain the difference. Why did you use peer review versus evidence-based?
This defines evidence-based. I mean, that's how you get to evidence-based. That's typically what regulations try to do is to try to clarify so that there's a way to move forward. Otherwise, there's no clear way to say what evidence-based is. So these are two recognized ways to get to identify evidence-based.
Okay. Well, I guess that's something that I would definitely has brought concern. Others have brought concern in regards to that. But I do want to allow Representative Tammy Wilson to speak. She did have a few questions for you, so I believe she's still online, Representative Wilson. Yes, I'm here. Okay, thank you. And thank you for your patience today. I really appreciate it. If you could please ask the commissioner or the department any questions that you feel appropriate. Well, I just want to go back because my question wasn't answered earlier. I was trying to do a follow-up. But the question was, you know, the comparison back to the Anchorage school system. You can only adopt other standards if they are more stringent than the ones that we have adopted. So, again, my question is the Common Core standards that was adopted by the Anchorage School District more stringent than the ones that we have adopted? And then the second question is still back to the base student allocation still comes from the Department of Education. And so if we are paying for curriculum to back the Common Core standards, the intent of what I put in there was so that no funding, we weren't discussing the definition of money, but does any funding coming from the Department of Education go to buying curriculum that is going to the Common Core standards?
Okay. There are no restrictions on local control in regards to what set of standards they choose to adopt, whether more or less stringent, but they do have an obligation to address the Alaska standards, whatever they may be. So if for some reason they chose a lower set of standards, they would have a requirement to make sure that they were raising the bar and addressing the Alaska standards. In the case of the Common Core, I believe that they're substantially similar. I think in several areas, Alaska standards are slightly higher. Anchorage has that responsibility to address those differences. In regards to paying for curriculum, the best I can explain it, Representative Wilson, is that, you know, through a funding formula, we support districts based on their student count, based on that formula, but we don't determine those local decisions of curriculum. I guess if it is perceived that, I surely didn't anticipate that this was perceived to stop districts from purchasing, to put a restriction on districts purchasing curriculum, but the department doesn't purchase that.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Please.
So I thought there was, and I can't tell you whether it's statute or regulation, that for a district to do a different set of standards, that they had to have an approval by the department. So that is not true, and the districts can do any standards that they want?
There isn't a process for a different set of standards. Districts are all obligated to address the Alaska standards. If, in addition to that, they want to incorporate some other methodology, pedagogy, that includes a different set of standards for any particular subject, they can do that, but they are all obligated to address the state standards.
So, Madam Chair, I guess my concern here is, and it's been a concern I've had for a long time, it's not just about the standards and how close they are to the Common Core, but if we're allowing districts to choose whatever standards they want, and then the curriculum is supposed to be aligned, and so is the testing, we could put all these different things into effect, mm-hmm. But the bottom line is if we have schools that are struggling, which we do, and we have for a long time, and changing our standards and changing our testing hasn't changed those struggles. And so I guess really what I would ask is, does the department choose to do anything different this time around that they didn't do No Child Left Behind and stepping in academically helping schools, not financially, so that those students raise up to a level that we need them to be able to pass these tests?
Yes. We are working much more extensively than we have in the past. I have got staff that are more out in districts than they are at the department now, to the greatest extent possible, working with districts, with all levels of districts, with teachers, and trying to be very, and switching our model specifically from that intervention model to supporting low-performing schools. So we are working on that to make sure that all our students and our schools are successful. Obviously, we're a little early on trying to determine if they're successful or not. We haven't assessed them yet. I would imagine it'll be several years, but we'll have a new baseline this year, and we'll be able to build from there.
And finally, Madam Chair, and maybe this is a discussion your committee can have, if we didn't get the amendment right the first time when it came to monies going into the Common Core standards or curriculum, would we need to make, based on what the commissioner said, a statute change so that we could be clearer on what our intent was?
And are you asking that question to me or to the commissioner?
Well, I would be,
I would like to know whether or not, because it sounds like the commissioner thinks that we're only talking about teacher helps that they give currently, but for me and for my constituents, they don't want to see Common Core any more than they already have into the district, and now that any funding except directly from the department, so I guess that would be outside the formula, could, I know from speaking with you and others, that was, we wanted to make sure the state was not using any of its funding to keep going forward with this initiative.
And Representative Wilson, that was my understanding as well. It seemed to me there was a bit of trickery, you know, and with this amendment in not spending any money to implement the set of standards. Ours was to not spend any state public funds, period, on any part of the Common Core initiative in any fashion or another. And I was as clear as day in regards to my intent, and I'm a vice chair of the Education Committee, so I don't want mine to be mistaken in any way. But I absolutely am very disturbed the fact that we were told that, one, we weren't doing Common Core, two, that we'll never do any having to do with curriculum, but then over and over again, if you actually listen to what's being said, The curriculum has to be selected, and now it has to be selected to be on these specific standards across the entire state, and then the assessments are the same Common Core. I mean, it adds up. We're doing Common Core across the state. We have Common Core standards. We're doing Common Core assessments, and we're doing Common Core curriculum, and the freedom is being lost by the state. Freedom is being lost by the individual. Freedom is being lost by the homeschoolers, and it looks like a monopoly. In all practical purposes, it is developing before our eyes, and I'm very, very concerned about all of this. I'm vehemently going to fight for states' rights, for the legislator's stamp of approval, not the Board of Education, strictly just moving ahead without us, rolling us concern after concern, no matter how many Board of Education meetings. My concerns are void on arrival, and I'm very concerned with how I'm being treated as an elected official, as elected by the people. The concerns are being rolled and misinterpreted, and I want to make sure that I'm heard loud and clear, and as many other legislators, and that the truth is coming out of exactly what we're doing in the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to working with you on this coming session.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. And was there anybody else who had any questions? Representative Wes Keller, please.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Again, this kind of discussion is what is going to, you know, solve a lot of the problems. But I just want to confirm what I heard twice today, and that is that evidence-based, the definition is peer review. And so is that standard definition in education? And as I understand peer review, it's taking an unspecified number of people with experience in the same area and getting their feedback or their input on it. It seems like a real crude tool to be described by the term evidence-based, and I'm sorry that I am so slow catching on to this. I think that's probably been the standard, and it's just dawning on me. But I just want to confirm that was what you said, because Superintendent Brownell said the same thing.
Right. When you look at research, in research conversations, that's oftentimes how evidence base is determined, is through peer review. So there's a consensus, if you will, from people in like fields with like expertise to determine if that evidence is truly, you know, evidence.
This is a follow-up, but that means then that peer review process can be described to us, and so we can look at that and appreciate it better?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, and with that, Commissioner, thank you for being here. I do expect a lot. We have many, many more concerns through this web of information and that we have been researching, so you will be getting a follow-up letter from us to address additional concerns. But we do thank you, and we would like to formally request the cost of in its entirety as stated, and I will do a follow-up request for that. But with that, thank you for being here. We do appreciate it. I'm going to take a one more last public testimony, but Commissioner, thank you once again for being with us.
You bet.
Taryn Leskly from North Pole, are you still online? And I apologize for your extra long wait.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Karen, can you please proceed?
Yes, my name is Karen Leskly. I am from North Pole, Alaska, and I'm calling in to represent no one other than myself and my family. I homeschool through IDEA currently, and I'm just calling in to urge the rulemakers regarding correspondence homeschool programs that I and many other homeschoolers that I know say yes to any unused student allotment being allowed to roll over to the next year, making it available to students the next year in addition to the next year's normal allotment amount. And I urge against correspondence homeschool students or any students being forced to use state standards aligned materials, only because the state standards are indeed Common Core standards. I have read the Common Core standards in entirety as well as the Alaska state standards, and I have read multiple letters from UAS, CCSSO, Commissioner Hanley, and others in which it is stated that the standards, Alaska standards, and the Common Core standards are, quote, nearly identical. Let's see here. There is something known as the 15% rule in Common Core standard adoption regulations, under which a state is allowed to adopt the Common Core, but not say they're adopting it, put a different name on it, because they're adding up to 15% of their own unique standards. That rule, it's a commonly known thing. You can look it up.
You can adopt the Common Core and you can add up to 15%, I believe is what it is. I don't have that in front of me right now, but I understand what you're saying.
Right, and that is essentially what Alaska has done. I don't know that we added a full 15% difference, but we added a few little things. Some of the letters that I've looked at delineate those things. I can pull them up here.
And you can email them. I take emails from people as a follow-up just to make sure that we heard everything correctly in public testimony.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a lot of the changes were minutia. They were grammatical changes from changing the term explain why, where the Common Core standards say know that or design instead of develop. Multiple.
Our office actually has done a complete comparison word for word in regards to this, so we're in agreement with you.
Oh, good. Then you know what I'm talking about.
Well, we clearly know what you're talking about. So.
And let's see here. I'll move on. So since the Common Core standards are Alaska standards, I oppose any students, but especially the correspondence homeschool students, being forced to use any state standards aligned materials. Let's see, I ask you guys to uphold limitation for no funds to be spent on Common Core implementation to include purchase of curriculum by individual districts, Common Core curriculum, that is. Please remove limitations on students that require four fundable or core courses for the correspondence programs. Please keep out any legislated action to be taken if a child scores poorly. Most parents, program contact teachers, and the correspondence programs themselves would be self-corrected. Others are simply on a different sequence and taking a different route to the same end, but will at points in time be ahead or behind of the public school sequence. They might be ahead, but might not have learned math or another subject the Common Core way. Art of Problem Solving math curriculum is a good example. Art of Problem Solving is a greatly advanced math curriculum. It still doesn't teach math the Common Core way, though. However, kids will know math better than even that. So a kid could fail the Common Core test for not knowing to write paragraphs upon paragraphs describing how they got their answer or drawing blocks in the Common Core way. Please remove and keep out any regulations requiring homeschool programs and their contact teachers to do anything new, extra, or specific in response to low Alaska state test scores. Please remove limitations on purchasing non-sectarian items from sectarian vendors. Tim Klein's example of a calculator being purchased from a sectarian shop is a good example of that. Please remove the requirement for the SAT, ACT, and work keys. If that doesn't pass, please add a clause that no ACT, ACT, or WorkCase cut scores are to be implemented at any point in the future. And that is all I had to say. I agree with your comments and with Tammy Wilson's and Tim Klein's, just to put that on the record. And, by the way, AAI, Alaska's new testing company since leaving SBAC, AAI itself is a Common Core testing company. It's,
I have found links to SBAC with them, but I wasn't going to come forth in regards to all
you have to do is go to AAI's website. It's right on their page.
Correct. And I thank you. You are on this. You are following this. You deeply care, and I'm going to do whatever I can to empower these responsible homeschooling parents that are caring enough to give their life, and I don't believe that we should break something that's working. And so I do appreciate your testimony. If you could please email it to me, I'm going to go ahead and give you my email right now. It's rep, R-E-P, dot Laura, L-O-R-A, dot Reinbold, R-E-I-N-B-O-E-L-D, at akledge.gov. And I would like your testimony, and we are going to take it to heart.
At ak.ledge.gov?
Correct.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just a minute. In closing, I am hoping that I know you're from North Pole, but if there's a way you can make it to December 9th and 10th to our symposium, it is going to be for the parents. And we already have 3 confirmed speakers, and you are welcome to come and join us at the symposium in Anchorage.
Thank
We're
you.
We're going to have online capabilities as well, but I can't promise you that at this point.
Okay. Yes, I homeschool to keep my kids out of the Common Core system, but I've been homeschooling for a long time before Common Core was implemented, simply because of the math program that was, well, the rest of the curriculum, but primarily math, that was in the public schools. And what's interesting is my son, as a first grader at Badger Road Elementary, brought home a packet at Christmas time doing plus one and plus zero addition tables. He knew that when he was 3. I mean, we played and figured it out on his own. Now, fast forward, you know, this much time, he's 13 now. I have a friend who's in second grade at Nordale who's bringing home Common Core math, and I look at the problems, and they look easier than what my son had in first grade back in the, you know, early mid-2000s. So the idea that it's harder or more rigorous, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it in my friend's eighth grade work. It's not there. When I read the Common Core standards, you know, I homeschool to give my kids a truly more rigorous education because Common Core is not that.
Well, for one, there's a reason IDEA is the biggest school. I mean, let's start there. And for two, I know the whole marketing message over and over again that I've been hearing for year after year after year, and it's very debatable if they truly are more rigorous at some levels, and it's very debatable by experts on both sides, and I have tremendous amounts of information to back that up. So anyway, I do want to say thank you, and I hope you can join us on December 9th and 10th. And if not, possibly we can send you a transcript of what happened during that meeting. But with that, I appreciate your testimony, and have a good evening.
Thank you. You too.
And with that, we are going to go ahead and close out the Administrative Regulatory Review meeting. It is 4:15, and thank you once again for representatives that were online, and Representative Keller for being here, to my staff, to all the LIO people that have helped make this hearing a success. With that, we're closing. Thank you.